Hello, this is William Fink, and it's Monday, June 7th, 2010, and this is the second Christogenia open forum call on the Christogenia.net server. Hopefully everything will go all right, and everybody that wants to come will be able to find their way here. This is an open forum, so I don't have a whole lot to say. It's the listeners that make this program. That's the way it is. This is for fellowship and questions. And all kinds of things like that. Hello, Bruce. How you doing? Praise Yahweh.
Amen. Praise Yahweh. I hope I'm not too loud.
Well, Bruce, you're always loud, but that's okay. That's your presence. That's just the way it is. We don't mind. How are you doing?
Oh, really good. Thank you. Yeah, I spoke with Clifton today for an hour, and wow, what a great fellowship just talking with Clifton.
Great. That's good. I'm sure he appreciates the company from people that aren't bozos trying to call and argue with him over every tech doctrine. Because Clifton, I know he gets a lot of that.
Yeah, that's really immature, you know.
Well, that's nothing in scripture. Do.
Yeah, I think in scripture it plainly says that immaturity is basically a kind of like a self-serving, it's like the thing that's supposed to be crucified with Christ, that thing we call I, or me, that the Apostle Paul talked about. You know, I don't hear a lot of people talking about that.
Well, ego is a horrible thing. I probably have too much of it myself, I have to admit. That's just the way it is. But yes, we have to be always worried not to let our ego get in the way of doctrinal disputes. And to examine the scripture. That's absolutely important.
Yeah, a lot of times I think it becomes an issue of I'm right, you're wrong, kind of, you know, and that's the main, which is, it's immature.
No doubt, but people do it all the time. They fall into that trap time and again. I posted an interesting article today on the New Ensign site. That Robert Balakaius had sent out in his mailing. And there's a lot of links and mainstream news sources, and the World Health Organization scientists are evidently caught being in bed with the vaccine manufacturers. Can you imagine that? There's nothing new under the sun.
It's just a Jew incident, right?
Yeah, I was hoping to get Patricia on tonight, but she's not here. I'm sure she'd like to comment on that maybe later on.
Well, Scripture says there's nothing new under the sun in what, the Song of Solomon, is it? Mm-hmm, I think.
So what are you doing? Are you reading anything? Are you still having the ASCII, you know, talk show programs? I'm sorry I'm not abreast of it. I just have too much to do myself.
No, we're on Clifton's 80th Watchman's Teaching Letter, and he has, I think, 147 in... will come out the end of July, I think. But we have 80 of them done, and I always wish I could do more and better, but I just praise Yahweh that, you know, I think, you know, I'm not being arrogant. Maybe I am, but I think I'm doing pretty good reading them.
Well, that's great. I mean, if you want to move that to here, I'll set you up with the channel, and you can do it here, too. Yeah, you know, that's just an open offer. I'm not going to twist your arm to move from talk to you. If you're having success there, that's fine. And you might actually pick up more new people there, right? I mean, even though most of the new people are probably scoffers. But if you ever want to do that, just let me know, and I'll set you up with your own channel here just for that purpose.
Okay, maybe I'll have to set you up with a server for a year then.
No, I didn't catch that. You kind of cut out at the end.
No, I think $100 a month for a server would be well worth it if the resources to do that. I think that'd be great for you.
Well, this server is only costing $22 a month. This is a virtual private server. That the what I was talking about the other day was Christogenia. And there's no virtual private server upgrade for my Christogenia account. It's a real server, or there's no upgrade path. And the The alternative, and I could take the alternative, is to get another virtual server account and rebuild all of my websites. But that would cost $60 a month with 1&1. And I'm kind of married to them with my Krista Gettinger account because all my domains are registered there, and it would be a huge headache to move them. And I like 1&1 because they've been 100% reliable. I mean, Krista Gettinger has only had maybe an hour's downtime in the last 18 months. And I definitely can't complain about that. And a company with that kind of track record, I would hate to just walk out on and walk into something unknown. But if I opt for my own server on Krista Gettinger, I have to do something this summer because I've outgrown my shared hosting account. The sites are just too big for them. I need more memory. I need more disk space. I need more reliability. And the only way to do that is with a server.
You mentioned it was $100 a month. You mentioned it was $100 a month, Bill?
Yeah, right. That's a pretty big expense. That's nothing I'm gonna wait until I absolutely have to do it. Probably, I'm guessing around August. Chris, again, on shared hosting, you're limited to a 100 megabyte database size, and on my own server, there's no limit to database size. On shared hosting, I'm limited to Chris Degenier is all. It's not standard HTML. It's all PHP scripts and things like that. It's Drupal. It's a content management system. But there's a lot of code behind the pages, and for that reason, it requires server based memory to execute some of those scripts that make the program operate. And I really need 64 megabyte limit, and they're only on shared hosting. They're only giving me a 32 megabyte limit. So there's some things, especially on the MineConf site, that I can't do that I would like to do. So I'm outgrowing the limitations of shared hosting. That's all. And I knew this was coming 6 months ago, and I've been putting it off, and it's coming to the point where I just can't put it off anymore. So I have to.
Can you just say?
I have to talk to 1&1 and evaluate my upgrade options before I make a decision. I got to talk to my hosting service and evaluate my upgrade options first. But that's okay. I mean, we could talk about that, but it wasn't really what I wanted to talk about here. I'm not worried about that. Yahweh will provide me with what I need, I'm sure. I don't concern myself with it. I'll just do it when the time comes.
Yeah.
So what else are you doing besides reading Clifton's teaching letters? I mean, it's a great thing that you take that time to do that, being on the road all damn day, 365 days a year. I mean, that can't be easy. I don't know how much downtime you're forced to take a day, but it's probably not much more than you need to sleep, I'm sure.
No, it's my life. I mean, I don't see anything outside of those eternal values that are given to us in our blood. And I don't have to find any words to express how the joy that I have in being belonging to Yahweh, you know. And that's well, you know, everybody has this susceptibility to feel self-pity and feel sorry for ourselves, and you know, I mean, it's the old. I think that's the door that we ourselves set ourselves up to take the wrong door, if you will, which is, you know, feeling sorry for ourselves. But no, I count it all joy, and any little stupid temptation to be frustrated, I just write, you know, just go in my secret place on there and express it. And bring into captivity every thought that exalts itself, you know, like that. That's all.
Well, right. That's what we have to try to do with our lives, right? I have to speak to Gerald. Gerald, I suggest you watch for Overworld. If he shows, I mean, hopefully he'll show up here tonight. He's been on and off. On the chat server, he has been bitten by brown recluse spiders, And he said that he's had personal experience with charcoal compresses. I don't know exactly what that means. I mean, there's different kinds of charcoal. It could be, treated or prepared in some special way. But he said that he's been bitten twice by brown recluse spiders, and at both times, charcoal compresses worked amazingly, so wonderfully. So I really think you should, if he doesn't show up tonight, I'll send you his email address if you want, or him your email address or whatever, and hopefully that'll... His name here is Overworld. That's the handle he uses. He's in the Pacific Northwest. He's not anywhere near you. But I could probably put you in touch with him via email. He said that twice he was bit by brown recluse spiders and charcoal compresses worked. But I'm sure it's a little more involved than getting a piece of charcoal briquette from your barbecue and sticking it on your finger. There's probably a little more to it than that. If anybody wants to speak, please, this is an open forum. Right-click your name and click Request Talk Power so that I could know to turn your microphone on. I just don't want to go turning people's microphones on. That's rude. But this program is what the listeners make it. I thought I had a date with Michael and his friend Daryl he's been talking about for weeks, but I guess he's not here, so maybe he'll show up later. Well, it was in this hit. This even hit the mainstream news media, but I got it from naturalnews.com. The World Health Organization scandal exposed. Advisors received kickbacks from H1N1 vaccine manufacturers. We see that the United Nations is probably 10 times more corrupt than the FDA, which is 10 times more corrupt than your local government. The higher up the level ladder you go, the more corruption you find. There's no doubt. That's the best thing I saw in the news today, and it came to me from Robert Balakaius. Hello, Martin.
Hello. Actually, I thought it was kind of interesting that that Rahm Emanuel, his brother, Ezekiel Emanuel, was the head of, I believe it was, INH, and he was also leading up the whole thing with the swine flu vaccines.
Well, that's why I call them the world's greatest crime ring. I mean, that's what they are. Yeah. They're the world's oldest crime ring.
Yeah,
that's
and actually,
they,
and they have another brother who, Ari Emanuel, who's one of the biggest talent agents in Hollywood.
Hmm.
And they, so you know who their father was, right?
He was. I know was the mother was one of the first El Al stewardesses, I think, right?
Yeah, wasn't but the father was an assassin for the Stern Gang. And actually carried out some hit. I forget which, on some political figure.
Right. I know the whole family's been involved for years in all kinds of intrigue and crookedness. But that basically describes every Jewish family. Some of them are just more successful than others.
All the filth comes out of the woodwork. But yeah.
I also posted something today on the forum at Chris DeGennier, and it's I'm going to post this in my local paper, I think, tomorrow, because they have a forum. And I'm going to kind of call them out on it. Because this is supposedly, and I'm going to look it up first to check it out more, but this came from topics.com, which is a main, more or less, they're not really big, but they are, they specialize in local news in various places provided over the internet. And they collect news from the larger agencies or from small towns and target it at people that want news about various places. And I use it for my local business sites here. And topics.com, they're talking about the Senate Bill S-510, which makes it illegal to grow, share, trade, or sell homegrown food. And I got to read that bill, but that's absolutely crazy. That would be about the last straw for the freedom in this country. That's the way I look at it.
That it would be illegal to grow food?
To grow, share, trade, or sell homegrown food.
Have you verified that?
Well, I mean, topics.com is a pretty, reputable news service. So I haven't went and read the bill myself yet. But this is a, This isn't anything from Alex Jones. You know, this is the mainstream news organization. This isn't coming from any right wing nuts or left wing nuts. You know.
What was the number on that Senate bill?
S-510. Yeah, I'd like to check that out further myself. But if anybody wants to check that out, that's absolute evil when they try to stop a man from growing food on his own property. That would be the last straw. I think if we didn't revolt against our government in some manner after they pass this one, then we're going to just live on Twinkies and give them all our money for the rest of our lives. Which will be very short in that case.
Yeah, the only new bill I approve of is someone named Fink. You know, I see a lot of these clowns chasing after, like, the Ted Pike, you know. I had to face him down and basically told him he's encouraging multiculturalism and race mixing. And he said I was being blasphemous, you know. And this Ted Pike is supposedly exposing the Jews, while in fact he's promoting exactly the filth that they're spouting out of both sides of their mouth, you know.
Well, right. I don't know how you could expose the Jews as evil and say they're God's chosen people at the same time, or claim that they're Judah of the New Testament, or anything to do with Israel at the same time.
Exactly.
And that is cognitive dissonance. That is hypocrisy. I mean, I don't see how the two ideas could even be put into the same boat. That's absolutely mad.
Yep, and a lot of people, these clowns, and just go along with them and kind of really, really nice, patting each other on the back, and we have to take up the standards of Yahweh's law, and when man's laws are against and offensive towards his laws, then we're supposed to stand up and not be whimsical little wimps about it.
Well, absolutely. Well, let me say it again. If anybody wants to speak, right-click your own name and click Request Talk Power, and you'll be granted the ability to speak. And I would ask somebody to do that because this is an open forum program. There's nothing prepared for tonight. That's the way it is. And that's the idea of this program, is to converse in fellowship and debate when we have to and discuss. That's what it's about. And we can't do that in a one-sided manner. So what else is happening, Martin? What are you doing with your life? I guess he knew that his microphone and ran away. He quit. That's okay. What are you going to do when you get all of Clifton's teaching letters read?
I'm going to go on to the side notes, and then we'll be going over your audios on all of your letters and different citations, different subjects. Yahweh gives us the insight to put all the pieces together. There's a lot of pieces, but with Yahweh, all things are possible. And
I don't know if you know how to use an FTP program, but if you want, I'll give you an FTP account so you can download those recordings and from TalkShoe and put them on a web space that's yours, and that way be able to post them around wherever you want. If you have those programs on a web space, you can link directly to them from any forum you want.
Oh, okay.
It's not rocket science. It's just a matter of downloading them from TalkShoe and uploading them to your web space. And then you could just link to them from create a subdomain to go along with that. And you'll be able to give it a web address that will be a link to any one of your programs that you want. Do you see what I mean?
Oh, okay, Bill.
And that's not hard to do. That wouldn't take too much time. I mean, the big job is downloading them all from TalkShoe. Yeah, you know, you could upload them while you sleep at night. But from TalkShoe, you can only download them one at a time.
Yes, sir. I'm going to shrink them all down with Audacity and Johnny844.com, Mike's allowing me to use, but I just haven't built it. I need to work on that. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I would really like.
You're saying that you have a website?
No. Well, Mike has John844.com, and
yeah.
So I just haven't worked on it. But I would like to work on getting some of these rare articles, just like your Gerald's been scanning them. A lot of things to get things in audio format. What a lot of people prefer listening to audio rather than reading. I mean, it's probably our proclivity of being lazy, I guess.
Well, I don't think it's being... Oh, yeah, you know, a lot of people, that they're busy typing or they're busy driving, especially the drivers. Yeah, you know, and that's the boat you're in yourself, you know? And they would always rather listen. You can't read and drive. I mean, it's just not possible.
Very true. I'm harnessed on myself.
If you're not listening to something that's constructive, that then you're just, that driving time is just dead time, right? I mean, how many top 40 pop songs can you listen to before you just want to scream and jump out the window while the truck's moving at 60? You know?
I don't listen to any of that.
So that's my point. I mean, you can't listen to the news either. That'll just make you want to kill somebody.
Yeah, praise Yahweh, we could turn that damn thing off and not even give it any of our attention.
Right, but it's hard for the mind to stay occupied driving on the road. I mean, it's prayer and meditation are really something that takes a lot of practice that we are severely lacking in this world, I think, because we're so used to being bombarded with bits of information and sights and sounds constantly, right? It's the glut environment we've been raised in.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned that as far as the what the words Paul used in the sense of the power of the air, where the communications. Whoa, what was that? where all these sound bites are, you know, if we can break this. It's kind of like the way I look at it is like Jeremiah talked about the soft clay that Yahweh can mold. And as far as our conditioning, we've allowed ourselves to be encrusted, if you will. I don't know. It's hard to put a euphemism about it, but breaking the mold that we've been conditioned to by this, you know, false religion, our own conditioning, Judification, I call it. Well, I'm not going to fall into Lindstad and talk about poop all the time, but that is a really crazy thing going on over there with those some people. They're getting these click. How can I say it? They take up slandering others and putting others down. Instead of gathering the sheep together, they scatter, you know. That's a horrible horrible thing to get involved in, that kind of thing.
Well, right, you're either scattering sheep or gathering sheep. If anybody didn't hear my interview on the Patriot Games Thursday, yeah, you know, sometimes when you get interviewed by somebody that that doesn't really know, you know, you're not exactly preaching to the choir. I mean, most of the people that were in the forum were regular listeners to the programs that Eli and I do together. But sometimes when you get interviewed by somebody who's not a member of the church, so to speak, you get to say things a little differently than you would otherwise say them, or you get to say different things, or discuss, you know, things from a different point of view. And if anybody didn't listen to the Patriot Danes interview that I did Thursday, I've had nothing but positive feedback about it. And it's on the front page of Christigenia. So that's all I'll say about that. Maybe she'll have me back. She seems to very much enjoy the interview and like the program and like me, and maybe we'll win her over. So we'll see. Other than that, I have nothing new cooking. Just the more of the same routine. I'll be back on with Eli and Brian before I know it, because the weeks just fly by. If anybody wants to talk, right-click your name and click Request Talk Power, and I'll turn your audio on. Yes, Bruce?
It's interesting, the Song of Solomon, there's nothing new under the sun, all things for vanity, meaning to say. Everything put together, you know, by our little, you know, little self or big self or whatever you want to call it. Nothing new under the sun, but all things, if any man be in Yahshua our prince, all things are new. Are new.
Well, right. Yeah, right. All things are new. All things will be new when that time comes. But there is nothing new under the sun. No matter what devices that men dream up, it's been dreamed up before. There's no doubt.
Are we raised into heavenly places in Yahshua, our prince, or are we raised under his feet?
Are we raised under his feet? He's to put all things under his feet. We subject ourselves to him, and that puts us under his feet too. That's the way it is, but that's where we should be. As Christians, that's where we should want to be. And woe to those who resist that, because they're going to end up being crushed under his feet. That there's no doubt. But when we accept him, he accepts us as brethren. If indeed we are his brethren. Because it's genetic as well as it is spiritual. The genetics come first. You must be born of the water. Then the spirit. Or and the spirit.
And he that overcometh shall reign with him with an iron rod, as he overcome and does reign.
Well, right. But that term, time to reign, is not yet. Paul asked the Corinthians, without us have you ruled? And that was a rhetorical question that the King James dismissed, that they make a statement out of it.
It sure is the patience that's not of this world.
Well, right. And that's the challenge, is to transcend the thinking of the world. Well, we all want to be fleshly and take things into our own hands and go out there and straighten everybody out and fix everything and right all the wrongs. But we have to realize that we're just men, and we really can't do that. And we really can't do anything without our Father.
Mm-hmm.
So blessed are those who wait upon Yahweh, as the prophet Isaiah said. And he said that several times. And that's what we are compelled to do in this time, because who can fight with the beast? We can't fight with the beast. So what else is going on? Somebody out there has to want to say something or ask something or debate something. So somebody, ask to unmute your microphone. Liven this place up a little bit. No takers, Bruce. It's just you and I. I'm glad you're around, because I'd be singing Yankee Doodle Dandy right now if you weren't here. That'd fix everybody. I gotta figure out how to stream music through this, and there's a way to do it. That there's and I'll get it sooner or later. I think I need my Windows PC to do it. But Kurt from Tennessee, he stopped in the program last night. He usually just comes in as a guest, but He's a real good brother, and he's an old, well, a much older gentleman in down south whose father survived as prisoner of war after World War II, and his grandfather, I think it was, that survived a prison camp in Soviet Russia somehow and got out of there or something. I'm really trying to get this guy onto the to get him, and I think the group would really love him. I'm really trying to get him to come on to the Sunday night program with Sword Brother and I and relate the stories that were handed down to him from his father and grandfather. That might be really interesting. Well, anyway, he made up this. He's a musician also, and he made this little song, and I'd really like to play it, but I got to figure out how to stream music through TeamSpeak. So I'll probably try to work on that over the next one day over the next couple of weeks. It won't take me a couple of weeks to figure out. It's just getting a day set aside to do it. It's not, TeamSpeak isn't really meant for streaming music over, but there's a technique that can be used to do it that I have downloaded from their website, from their forum. What's up, Martin?
Okay, I found some information about it when I did a Google search, but nothing definitive. Then I went to the Congressional Record, and I didn't find anything there. I went to USSenate.gov, and I am downloading the PDF for it right now.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
So, yeah, but there is actually a Senate bill, Senate Bill 510 now.
Maybe you should email me the PDF.
Okay.
WN Bank or info@chrisdegania.org is good. And I'll post it on the forum with that article. Yeah, you know, I'll stick it on a web space and link it right to the article I posted in the forum. That'd be great. But I'd like to read it over too.
It's taking a while to download.
Yeah, is it that big a PDF?
Apparently.
Or you're on a dial-up.
I'm not on dial-up. I'm on a DSL over telephone line.
How much speed do you get with that?
It's just like a regular cable line.
It's as good as cable, you think?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Actually, I had this computer on cable, and it's the same exact speed.
Okay. I'm not happy with my cable speed here at all. I think it's actually a lot slower than most of the other people I speak to.
Hey, Bill.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Martin. No, you, sir.
No, I was just going to say that I was wondering how fast that satellite is, but I guess the satellite is just as fast as DSL or a cable. Yeah.
Well, the satellite, the upload speeds are slow, and that's where my cable is slow, is the upload speeds. And I do a lot of uploading. You know, I'm always converting videos and things like that, and uploading them to my sites and uploading programs to my sites, and it's slow. I mean, it takes a good 6 to 8 minutes sometimes just to upload a 10-megabyte, 12-megabyte audio file. It's crazy. And I think that's awful slow for cable.
So you saw that thing with Helen Thomas, right?
What forced her out of the White House? I didn't click on it.
They asked her what she thought about what had happened with the flotilla, and she said something to the effect that the Israelis should get out of Israel, and that they should go back home to Germany and Poland.
What? They would end up back on the Lower East Side in Manhattan. That's what they.
Yeah, exactly. Go back to hell where they belong. But anyways, she.
So
she
actually said that. That's actually pretty brave of her. Is she a Negress? I guess she is, right?
No.
No, she's white?
Yeah, she's 89 years old. And her.
So what was she, like the press secretary under Dwight Eisenhower? Is that where she got
started? Basically. Yeah. or Lincoln or something. But she said that like on Saturday, and then she was fired today by Hearst. Or they said that they were letting her go or whatever.
Oh, so she was only a White House correspondent.
Go ahead.
Then she was only a White House correspondent. She must have been a White House correspondent if she was fired by Hearst, right? I mean, I don't know. I'm asking. I don't know. I thought I had the impression from the posting in the forum that perhaps she worked for the White House.
She's been a reporter for years. She's been a reporter. She questioned presidents, I suppose, way back to Eisenhower. Helen Thomas, yeah. Been around for decades.
Yeah, 89 years old. She may have been in the newspaper business with Herbert Hoover or FDR or something.
She's not really worried about saying what she thinks, I guess. She never
not
was.
At that age, but that's all still awfully bold of her. I mean, what a way to cap a 60-year career, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe 70. That's incredible.
Clifton mentioned Diane Sawyer was evidently was talking about how a lot of black women are getting white men and how talking about how wonderful it is or something along those lines. I'll have to look up that.
All of the white guys I grew up with, we all thought it was absolutely disgusting. I mean, I don't know one white guy personally that actually went for black women. Yeah, the only guy I ever knew personally who dabbled in him, he was actually Sicilian, which probably doesn't count, right? Helen Thomas looks like a Jew. She looks like a Jewess to me. I mean, I'd like to see her maiden name.
She's got that real long, long, pointed down, Wicked Witch of the East type nose. That's the impression I get from this picture. I might be wrong, but... Oh, she's Lebanese. Yeah, well, that makes her a Jewess. It just, she's just a non-Talmudic Jewess. I mean, she's got that J. Haplo type in her, so she's the same blood as Wright. She's a Canaanite. So if she's Lebanese, then it was only natural for her to say what she said. She shouldn't be forced out for that. That's crazy. Right? I mean, if she's Lebanese. Helen Thomas, is she any relation to Danny Thomas? What is it with Lebanese and that name Thomas? Yes, the older they get, the uglier they get. There's no doubt. But usually they're ugly by the time they're 16 anyway. Or even sooner. That's when they get nose jobs for their bat mitzvahs.
Somebody mentioned that
the National Director of the Anti-Defamation League, Abraham H. Foxman, said Sunday that Thomas's apology did not go far enough. He probably wants her to make reparations payments to 6 million Holocaust survivors for 40 years, I'm sure. Yes, McBragg or son of the miss, that's what they do. They're 16 and daddy buys them a nose job, but then by the time they're 24, they outgrow it and they're ugly again. Not that the nose job itself could really fix them. That's a running joke in, you know, where I'm from in Jersey. Jewish girl hits 16 and her rich daddy buys her a nose job. Fixes it up for her bat mitzvah. I guess Martin just fell off the face of the earth because he, I heard some static and he disconnected and he's gone. David, what are you up to? Maybe I'll just sit and talk to myself. That's okay. I'm sorry.
No, don't talk to yourself too long, Bill. Hey, in reference to scripture, you know, the word eunuch, eunuch?
E-U-N-U-C-H,
Is that a man that not necessarily can't have kids, or does he have his scrotums removed, or his penis? Or,
No.
What is a eunuch?
In earlier times, a eunuch was a man who was usually a slave, who was taken to serve in the house of the king. And he would be, he would have, very often, they would actually remove their testicles and make them eunuchs. And that was usually, that they wouldn't remove their penis, they would only remove their testicles.
And
they would
testicles.
Become eunuchs. Yeah, so that they couldn't, so that there would be no confusion over whose offspring would inherit the throne. So they would remove their testicles.
Well, I wonder if they had the procedure of performing vasectomies back then. Who knows?
No, there's no known record of it, and they would just remove their testicles, and they became eunuchs. They didn't understand the need of the testicles in a relationship for testosterone, but they did understand that men became effeminate without testicles. They did understand that. However, in later times, in most places, the practice ceased. Yeah, you know, eventually the practice ceased, but in Hebrew and in Eastern and Mesopotamian cultures, they still continued to refer to servants of a king or queen as eunuchs. The word stayed, even though the practice in most places went away.
So necessarily, they not necessarily did have any of their privies removed.
Well, right. It's possible that it's likely that the eunuch, the Ethiopian eunuch of Scripture, was probably not a eunuch, but he still maintained the title of eunuch as being a servant to the queen.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the same language that Paul used about, he that's married can attend unto the things of Yahweh rather than the
Well, right, and Christ world, used the sense. Word. Christ used the word. You know, and Christ said that that, you know, there were some that would make themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake. That doesn't mean they cut off their own testicles. It just means that they that they put the worldly
out.
Urge for lust and sex away and overcame it.
Exactly.
That's what
exactly.
It means. It doesn't mean that they went and took care of their own testicles.
Yeah, and Clifton saw a note about the brain releasing a certain amount of opium during orgasm, you know, and so that people who are always, you know, chewing on sex like a cow chews cud are opium addicts. You know, when people are just
overly... Well, I don't know
overly...
if it's actually opium, but it might be some, you know... I'm sure it's a chemical hormone that creates a similar feeling.
Yeah. And so all this Jew crap that they put on the... Well, you know, all this worldly electric toilet stuff going on in radio and Hollywood, and it probably releases some other, you know, some chemicals we might not know of, you know, who knows? I mean, who knows what we're not biochemists, but so to turn all of that crap off is wonderful, you know.
Endorphins, right, that they're the chemicals the brain releases that give us the sense of pleasure. I'm not sure if they're the only chemical. I don't know. I'm not a, like Bruce said, I'm not a capillochemist, a head chemist. hello, Pilgrim. If a black man can't eat it or have sex with it, he destroys it. Exactly. That's an old prison state saying, too. If they can't fornicate with it or eat it, that's exactly what they do. They destroy it because they find it useless. Hello, Pilgrim.
Hello there.
Hi, Pilgrim.
Do you have something specific that you'd like to talk about, Pilgrim?
No.
No? Oh, you just wanted to hang on. Okay. I thought
I'd come up with some news to talk about. I've been pumping them into the...
I'm sorry, Pilgrim, you're cutting out. You're cutting out.
I said since no one can come up with any subjects, I thought I'd pump some current events into the chat room and y'all can talk about that. China's falling apart here. They've got cracks in their dam and they're poisoning their people. And I thought that Facebook article was interesting. You know, Facebook is owned by a Jew. Zuckerberg or...
Well, of course it is. Would you expect anything different? I wouldn't. Facebook, MySpace, all of those outfits, right? They're the ones that get the financing that the banks put up with them because they're Jews. The banks, give them a perpetual license for large banks to be successful. It takes an outfit like that years to become profitable. And Jews seem to be the only ones that don't get foreclosed on before they do. I mean, that's my perception.
Well, I thought that cryptic Illuminati-type hoodie that Berg was wearing and that has created all of the hubbub and the rush on eBay.
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with that at all.
That's another article
I put in the Christogenia forum today, though, under Medicine and Science. Chinese fluoride. Even Jim Jones would not drink the water. That's what I titled it anyway. And this was a paper. It started out as a letter to the editor of the Cumberland Times. And this guy, I don't know if he's a Jew or a German, but Bernard Miltenberger. That's a toss up. And he explains how the towns in America are buying their fluoride for their water from the Chinese, and it's got all kinds of stuff in it sodium chloride and arsenic and all kinds of stuff in this fluoride. It's not anywhere near pure fluoride. It's incredible, and that's what our lovely municipalities are buying from the Chinese. Don't drink fluoridated water. Don't do it. No, drop the glass and back away from the spigot because you're just killing yourself.
They're buying their fluoride from China, especially. I mean, the fluoride's bad enough, but to have it laced with arsenic and all that other stuff, wow. Well, what are we going to learn?
Yeah,
not to buy anything from Jews and not to buy anything from Chinks. These people are animals. They want to kill us. I mean, it's part of their program to exterminate us. It has been for thousands of years. Mao spoke about it openly. Many other Chinese leaders over the years have spoken about it openly. And we just say, oh, we'll buy our food from them. That's good. They won't sell us bad food, would they? We are the ultimate idiot society. It's incredible how bad America is. It's incredible how dumb we are. It's absolutely, I'm speechless.
Now the question is, can one break that mold?
When is America going to wake up? I mean, our people as a whole, how much mercury and arsenic are you going to buy before you just figure out that if you buy anything from the Chinese, it's loaded with mercury and arsenic or lead or some other poison, some other chemical that's not supposed to be in there.
Yeah, and I was looking at drinking water, like a gallon of drinking water, and it said right on there, fluoride added for flavor. What the hell is that?
Fluoride added for flavor. People are so used to this stuff that they can't drink water without it. That's just crazy.
Yeah.
I'm on a well here, and I don't drink too much of that water either, but it's I'm not drinking any fluoridated water. How would that? We live in a whole country where people just, we're all drinking the Jim Jones Kool-Aid. Maybe Jim Jones was a prophet. I don't know.
Well, you should call your city or whoever provides your water. I called mine, and they don't add fluoride to our water. All of them don't.
Rare.
Yeah. Well, no, not all towns do, but I think most do. I'm sure most towns and cities in America do.
Oh, probably.
I know I can't. I don't know a town in Jersey or a big town in New York that doesn't. I mean, they might be there, but I've never seen one. So what else is going on? Let's not stop there.
Well, I'm looking for. Haven't covered yet. Well, I thought that Facebook hoodie story was a comment on the state of the mentality of society, all wrought up about this hoodie with this symbol inside that this guy was wearing, has to have it.
I'm sorry, Pilgrim, you cut out a couple of times, but I missed some keywords there.
Oh, it was nothing.
Oh, it couldn't be that bad. Hello, Kent.
Oh, hello, Bill. Thanks for answering.
Oh, you don't have to thank me. Thanks for coming on and saying something. This is the first.
Yeah,
well, we should write this day down.
How do I sound over there?
You sound fine. I have some feedback from Pilgrim.
Oh, okay. She'll I just turned of off my room speakers, too. Did that help?
Oh, maybe it was coming from you, but I saw Pilgrim's light up real quick. But maybe,
yeah,
I'm sorry, Pilgrim. Yeah, the room speakers will do it.
Yeah, I kind of forgot to do that.
No, that's okay.
Well, that's real good. You know, when I had just the room speakers on, you were coming through like a microphone, if I may use a metaphor, kind of. And then Bruce Gorman was coming through like a megaphone.
The man is twice my size. He has lungs like a circus.
That's
panda.
Impossible. Nobody's twice your size. Everybody is dead.
Bruce got lungs. Yeah, you know, he's about twice as wide as me, and he has lungs like circus tents. And he has his booming voice. I don't know. I weigh 250 pounds, and I got this little wussy voice, I guess. I don't know.
No, you don't at all, but I just mean, it was like a volume thing, you know.
Yeah, right. And wherever I go, I have volume problems. And I'm trying to talk louder than I want to, but it's And I have, I'm recording on Bill, that's me recording, and I have my volume increased so that I could hopefully equalize it for the recording. I'm cheating, in other words.
Well, all right, whatever works.
I have feedback from Pilgrim, so I had to mute her. What we have, it is Pilgrim that we're getting feedback from. That's Windows Vista again. It strikes every time. Sorry, Pilgrim.
Well, our education system teaches us to be effeminate, and, you know, being articulate and speaking clearly is very important, you know?
Well, yes, well, it is
I try
important.
To speak well. I'm kind of raspy, but I, you know, the Forbidden City of China, that was forbidden actually to men who were complete. And the emperor was the only one that was complete in the Forbidden City. And every other man was less than a man in the Forbidden City.
They were all eunuchs.
Yeah, they were all eunuchs. That's right.
And that's, you know, the ancient Egyptians, and that's a remarkable about Joseph, that he kept his testicles, evidently. But the ancient Egyptians and the ancient Persians, and I don't know if it happened with the Greeks, but I know that some of the Romans had slaves that they called eunuchs. And the Assyrians, that they did it to servants who were actually going to serve in the king's house, you know, in the king's quarters, so that servant would have access to the harem, and they made them eunuchs.
Right. Well,
and that's why they did it. That's why they did it. There's no trust. It's just, if you're going to work here, that's it. It's off with the, that they wanted to make sure that, I don't think, you know, they just wanted to make sure that the heirs to the throne actually came from the loins of the king.
Right, right.
But later on, as the practice became, it fell out of vogue, and they still maintained the term to describe a servant in the king's court.
Now, that kind of amazes me because, you know, if you were one of those servants, would you want that epithet?
Well, most of them were slaves and didn't have a choice.
Oh,
And it might be, you know, often I could imagine it being a trade-off.
Yeah. And maybe with Potiphar threw Joseph in jail and left him intact because he didn't trust his own wife in the first place, and he kind of threw Joseph in jail just for kind of a show. Otherwise, you'd think he maybe would have gone ahead and done something drastic.
Well, right. Right, absolutely. And yeah. There'd only be 11 tribes in Israel if Joseph were a eunuch.
Yeah,
we'd have
that's
a
right.
Yeah, you know, we'd have a problem.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not permitting anybody named Black Hebrew Israelite to come into this. This is not public, like, talk show. I'm just not doing it. There will be no trolls here. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, we should avoid them out.
Well, it's no sense in talking to people like that. There's no point in it. Joe from Pennsylvania, he was probably one of the guests in my hundreds of announcements on TalkShoe. And finally, you know, it probably took him weeks to figure out how to get here. And he finally made it. But he's gone, permanently.
Who is it?
We had a visitor named Black Hebrew Israelite.
Oh. Yeah.
And that's just not going to happen here. This is going to be a troll-free chat server, as long as I can keep it that way.
That's just on the same level with calling Jesus a kike.
Well, we're a family, and that's, you know, we should be a family. I'm not going to put up with troublemakers, and I'm not going to stomach people that want to cause division, and that's, we should all have that same attitude. Yeah, you know, if we're going to be a family, that's the way it should be. And that's what an assembly of the people of Yahweh should see itself as. That's the way it is.
Amen.
And if he had an innocuous name and didn't run his mouth, he'd have probably got to stay and listen. But with a name like that, that's just effrontery. That's all it is. And I'm not going to put up with any effrontery. Yeah, you know, he's out of here. That's it.
He'll come back with a real Lammy name.
Well, he's banned by IP number, so if he's on a dial-up, he might make it back. If he's on a dial-up, he might make it back. But if he's not on a dial-up and has a pretty much a static ID, then he can't ever come back.
Okay. Would dial-up even work with this deal?
Yes, dial-up will work here. Well, the thing with dial-up is that when you dial-up, and he'd have to do a couple other things to get back also. He'd have to delete and uninstall all his TeamSpeak and wipe out everything and his registry.
Yeah,
you know, he'd have to make sure TeamSpeak was erased from his system and reinstall it.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, so
that's a pretty big deal.
Well, yeah, it's nothing. Yeah, you know, I could do it in 2 minutes. Yeah, you know, but if you don't know what you're doing, it could be a big deal.
Yeah, he'd have to be sort of hell bent on crashing this place to do that.
Right, and even then, the first three digits of his IP number are not going to change, and I'll always know that there's a 99% chance that it's him again. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
So,
do you write those numbers down then, or what?
No, the server tracks them for me. I don't.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, right. He could have multiple computers, but if he, you know, I have three computers, but when I come here, I'm on the same IP number. Yeah, you know, my IP number hasn't changed in over a year. It can change. The cable company doesn't guarantee me a static number that won't change. But usually, it's been consistently the same for over a year. It's only changed once, I think, since I got home 18 months ago. So.
Okay. Well, I heard you on that Subi Sisters program the other night, and you really shone well on there, Bill. I want to say I wasn't there for the live show, but I heard it later, and it was really fantastic. You basically ran the whole show, which was good because that's what you should do. But it was really great.
Yeah, thanks. Well, there's some things you know. I know she's not identity.
Oh, she's not, huh?
And right, she's not. So there's some basic groundwork. That you know, the historical background and things like that I wanted to show her that I had a full grip on and could explain well, that just so that she didn't go there trying to doubt that with me and dispute that. I wanted to show her that there is a scholastic foundation to identity, because even a lot of great people that can explain identity don't have that grounding to explain that with confidence. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Right.
Might be able to quote things they heard from Capt and Convery, but they really don't have the scholastic grounding to do it with confidence. That's all.
Right, so you hit it. Yeah, you hit it. The history, the whole, you know, the languages, everything. She didn't have a thing to say, you know, to argue any of those points. But I don't think she wanted to.
Well, right, that was good. The program was scheduled for an hour, and it lasted almost two, so it was great. I thought it was great.
Yeah, it was great. Seemed pretty taken with you, too, I noticed.
I thought I was going to have a date.
Yeah.
yeah, she was really nice, and she sent me a nice email after the program. And hopefully she'll let me back for another program, right? And maybe get to reach a few people that otherwise I wouldn't get a chance to speak to. That's why I look at it.
Right. I didn't see the chat room, but she said it was very full.
Yeah, and most of the people, I have to say, were actually people that are here now and people that, you know, listen to the programs I do with Eli.
Okay. Well, there had to be some new ones. But, you know, I felt like she sounded like she knew who the Israelites are and who the Jews are, et cetera.
Well, she has become Jew-aware. There's no doubt of that. But I don't really think, and I think she's listened to Eli and I before, but she's never really stuck around. Yeah, you know, she's listened to a half hour segment here and a half hour there and talked in the chat room and that maybe a dozen times over the last year, but she's never really stuck around. And if you don't get, you know, if you listen to Eli and I, a lot of times you're getting stuff that's, you know, way past the foundation. And if you don't have the foundation, you're not going to understand it. You know what I mean? If you haven't heard the historical background and the basic foundation of Israel identity beliefs, then you're really not going to understand it when we talk about Romans chapter 11. Yeah, you know, or Galatians chapter 3 so well. Yeah, you really need that foundation first, I think.
Right. Right. Although she did say she's been all over the website.
Yeah. Well, she did read. I know she read my she invited me on a program for about 2 weeks before the program, and she invited me on a program because they call me Kaiser, who's here talking to me quite often. He was actually, I don't know if he was the only one, but I know that he recommended me to her. And she wrote me about 2 weeks before I appeared with her. And she, I the first thing I did was I said, hey, you want to talk about this and that and this and that. Why don't you go see my website and take a little study on that and see what I'm about. Yeah, so that, and she did it. To her credit, she did it. And she sent me a couple of questions in the email about the Mind Comp site. And we didn't really get a chance to get into that very deeply, but she wanted to know. Yeah, it's like right. The usual person that's introduced to me has a huge range of questions. Everything from who were the Jews to who were the Jesuits to from the first century to the fifth century to the, it's all over the map. That's the way it is. So that's why I wanted to get that foundational history in first. I thought that was important.
Well, you're kind of encyclopedic. I noticed you're able to change gears pretty well. And if you have it somewhere in your head, it's pretty much available and anytime you need it, it seems like.
Well, Bill had a lot of time.
It's just luck. It's just luck, I think.
No, I don't think so.
I think Bill just spent 12 years clearing off the flight deck, that's all.
There's a lot of things I don't know, and there's a lot of details I don't have. And I try to not avoid those topics, but just admit that I don't know about them, right?
Yeah, and you do readily, so it's... You're right up front with all of it, so that's great.
Well, none of us can read everything. I mean, we don't like to, probably, but...
Yeah, no, there's a lot out there. There's certainly been. She'll probably come around eventually. I mean, she does a lot of research, and she's got the program. She's heavy into fixing things, so she'll be come around.
They have another program they do. I don't know if it's multiple times per week, but I did hear her on another program. That not on TalkShoe, on some other network, Freedom Radio or something, Truth Radio or some name kind of similar to that. So they do more than one program.
Oh, good. Just so she doesn't hang in with the idea that there's a political solution.
Well, yeah, right. But that's that's the next level of understanding, and it's it's sometimes it's a real pull. To get even people that have been in identity for a long time, to get them to the next level of understanding is a real struggle, or to try to convince them that that's the way it is. Yeah, even people in identity a long time want to still think there's a political solution, and it's just not. And I can tell that from the emails I get from people, that they're still, even after 20 years, they're still hoping for a political solution. I could name names, but I won't. But it's
bet half the people in this forum think there's a political solution.
Well, yeah, right. And we want that's something that I struggled with a long time myself. Because you get caught up in the idea that perhaps you can say something that's going to make people vote the right way or nominate the right candidate, and it just ain't going to happen. It's never going to happen. Because none of us can outspend the people that make the money. It can't be done.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
The people that make the money are always going to be able to spend much more than we can.
Yeah.
And have the bigger voice and have the media power and have the power of persuasion. So we have no political solution. And that's why I wrote that paper. I wrote that paper last year. There is no political solution. I don't know. I might be able to revisit it and do a better job. But I'm not saying it's the paper to convince all that there is no political solution. But I wrote that paper because I was getting emails from identity people that really surprised me. Because they certainly, from the emails they send out, believe that there is one.
Yeah, people won't let that go.
Right, that was 1886, Joe, Pennsylvania, and once they made corporations people and gave them the right of speech, there's no way we could compete with them. And that was probably the turning point in our losing our republic as it was founded. And even more than the Civil War and the 14th Amendment. Because there was no turning back once that was done. That's the way I see it. And that was Santa Clara versus some kind of railroad. Santa Clara County. I could probably pull it up. Maybe I can't because I think I moved it today. I moved into a staging area that I use for stuff that's waiting to get posted to my websites. And it's in there somewhere. And here it is. There's like 13 gigabytes of stuff here waiting to get posted to my website. Right? I just can't keep up. Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad Company, 1886. That was the decision. Very obscure decision that not enough people pay attention to. And don't understand the concept of it. Because a corporation is a fictional entity. And it's not supposed to be a... it's not supposed... Thomas Jefferson wrote, "Beware of permanent persons." And that's what he meant.
Actually, how do these permanent persons hurt us anyway?
Well, first, because they have much more money than we do. And because men are as grass. I mean, we come and go. Our opinions come and go. We can't perpetuate an agenda like a banking family that has a corporation can. That when we die, we don't know what our kids are going to do. And corporations have charters. And corporations, once they were made permanent, that they're perpetual. Their charters and the rules and the way they're set up, it perpetuates itself. And it's yeah. A much surer perpetuation than the perpetuation that than the man and his will. Now, when you create a corporation that has the freedom of speech that we have, but a lot more money and resources, do you see what I mean, than the individual man? How could you have an equal voice? If we're all men with the same ability to work and decision to spend the money that we make working, well, we don't need an individual voice, right? All we need is our individual voice, and we're all pretty much equal, even though some men are always going to have a little more money than others. However, a corporation has one person who ultimately is running it, a chairman of the board or a CEO, but that one person, he has at his disposal the resources of the entire corporation, which might include tens of thousands of investors who don't even agree with his politics. So he could take money and resources from people who don't even necessarily agree with him and use them to support and prop up and project that voice of the corporation.
Yeah, I could see a danger there.
In other words, you have a 401k. I mean, I'm not getting into your business, but let's say you have a 401k. And in your 401k, there's a stock portfolio, and you have shares in 100 different companies. Well, those 100 different companies, they all got a little chunk of your money. And they all got a little chunk of money from 10 billion people or whatever, 300 million Americans. And they can determine what their political agenda is because they have freedom of speech, because they're just like a person. But they have everybody else's money to do it with. You only have the money that your salary every week. And that's what most of us only have. But this corporation, they have the money from all these investors. And these investors don't even have to sign on to they might all be Democrats, and the CEO is a Republican, the chairman of the board is a Republican, and he's calling the shots. Yeah, you know what I mean? And that's the way it is. Now, that this, what's worse about that is that the corporation can perpetuate that far more than we can. We're going to die. I mean, and the corporation is still going to be there. And the corporation has, by law, no moral responsibility to the community. The only responsibility a corporation has by law is to make money for its shareholders, period. So the corporation gauges every opinion on the bottom line. And that bottom line is rarely in the interests of the community. Now, of course, there's all kinds of regulations that govern the corporation. You can't dump chemicals here. You can't spew that garbage out of your smoke shack there, out of your smokestack there. But that's still, the corporation can do many things that are against the best will of the community. It has no responsibility to the community. And that's why it takes all our machine tools and sends them to its plant in China. That's why it takes all our technology and moves it out of the country to our enemies. That's how they get away with that.
Well, that's true, yeah. But even an individual can do that.
Well, it's a lot more difficult for an individual who doesn't have the resources of all these people, of all this stock. Corporations have a power that few people realize they have. Corporations can make money. Corporations can manufacture money by issuing stock, by issuing bonds. And it's a gamble. They're making money they don't have. When a corporation says, oh, we're going to issue $100 million worth of bonds, they're gambling they're going to be able to pay off that $100 million when those bonds mature. That's a straight gamble. And investment banks sign on to it, but they don't really back up the value of those bonds.
No, they don't.
So the corporation.
And that's why they go public, is just so they can survive.
So the corporation has the ability to create money that you don't have. And it has the equal rights to speech, which means that it could. And because it's so much bigger and has the power to create money, to perpetuate itself, and to use the resources of hundreds of thousands of people who don't even necessarily agree, meaning the shareholders, the stockholders, then how is that a level political playing field? You can never compete at that level. Never. The average man. It's totally evil. To give the corporation the power of the freedom of, the rights to free speech, the rights of persons, was to totally poison the political system in this country. And to totally slant it in favor of the Wall Street bankers and the elite class that controls the corporations. It's the most evil Supreme Court decision ever, was that Supreme Court decision in 1886. It sold us out to the robber barons permanently. Now, in the 1700s, in the 1800s, corporations were never permanently chartered. They were only chartered for a term. By a state. A state had to issue a corporation a charter in order for it to have the right to exist. And a corporation would apply for a charter for 10 years or 20 years or whatever that state would allow. And it would have a stated purpose and a stated, group of investors. And once the stated purpose was completed and the time expired, the corporation would have to either apply to renew its charter, or it would have to cash in and pay off its investors and be done. But through the 1800s, one state assembly at a time, they bought off the assemblies and had all these states pass laws that corporations were permanent entities. But that was unheard of in and that was the battle with Andrew Jackson and the Federal Reserve. The Second Bank of the United States. Yeah, you see, the First Bank of the United States was granted, I think it was a 10-year charter, and the Second Bank of the United States was granted either a 10 or a 20-year charter. And that's the way it was done back then. And Andrew Jackson would not renew the charter. And the bank had to fold. And that's how he threw the wolves out of the temple. And they stayed out for almost 80 years until Woodrow Wilson. But by the time of Woodrow Wilson, corporations in most states were, or maybe all of them, were permanent. They didn't have those time limitations anymore. The Jews bought those laws onto the books one at a time, one state at a time.
They're very good at incrementalism.
well, yes, they are, incrementalism. They get us a piece at a time because that's the, I believe that they perpetuate that plan through the synagogues and the rabbinical schools and their Talmudic designs on our society. And there's no doubt that the same agenda, and it's, and this is why Christians are so dumb for not understanding that it's all about race. Yet, you know, if it was about choice and if it was spiritualized, whether or not, well, we each had a choice to believe in Jesus and act in a certain way, then why does generation after generation of Jew act like what they do? Yet, you know, I mean, it's definitely racial. There's no doubt that it's racial. Because they have carried on the same agenda against us for 50 generations in recent history. It's mad. What we are the stupidest people that, and we're so intelligent. And at the same time, we can be so dumb. It's incredible. I can't get over it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's a total miracle that we're here.
Well, if it weren't for the grace of Yahweh, we wouldn't be. And he wants us to learn this lesson. And I think that the lesson is that we're awfully stupid and he has the last laugh.
I don't think we're learning anything.
Well, you know something? Some of us are.
Well, I think it's more of a question of unlearning what we've learned. Like that fictitious corporation making it a personality. It's fictitious. It doesn't exist. Kind of like the ego. Of course, the ego is based on, you know, me, I. And that's what all this personality stuff promotes.
Yeah,
I did notice on that talk show, they have some clown talking about getting out of debt, and they have like 180 people there, you know. This talk show is burning money and down in Texas, you know, and people are more interested in the god of man than they are. It's absolutely nuts.
Hey, Bill, you still there?
Yeah, of course I am.
Okay, well, I just I went through a blue screen and I got another laptop and started doing the search on the bill, and I'm not seeing any validity to that. I did a word search on growing, and pretty much all references to growing were stricken, except for a couple, and they didn't look like they had anything to do with individuals.
All right.
Growing.
Well, so, yeah, that's good. But
if you want me to go ahead and forward that PDF.
Yeah, please, because I have to read it myself. I'm reading myself because Topics is usually it's usually pretty reliable. I mean, it's not a big news outlet, but it is it is a mainstream, more or less mainstream distributor of news. Yeah, you know, I'm signed up with them for myself because I have this little county I live in here only has one newspaper. And I don't necessarily trust for them to print everything where I want to see it, right? And I keep track of the local news here just because I run a couple of local websites that I'm trying to drum up business on. So the best way for me to do it is I watched them for a while and I signed up with them because they're pretty good at getting the important local news stories to me in emails every night. And that's why, and this was from a Topics in Kansas. Yeah, you know, they're all over the country, but they're aimed mostly at small towns. And this is from a Topics in Kansas. And it's a mainstream, it's a national internet-based mainstream news order that they don't create news. They collect it from local towns and agencies and things like that, and they distribute it. So I don't think they have a horse in this race yet, you know, and I kind of trusted them to be straight about it. But I'll read the PDF tonight if you send it to me. I'd appreciate
sure.
it.
Sure. That was info@christogenia.net or .org?
Info@christogenia.org, yeah. Or wmthink@christogenia.org.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I ended up getting a blue screen file, so I was down for about 15. All right, yeah. So, they fired her. Hearst fired her right on the spot today. And apparently Helen Thomas has been a reporter since 1943.
Well, I just saw her website that said she suddenly resigned. So was she fired or resigned?
In the paper, in the local paper that I have here, it says that Hearst let her go. Exact wording in a minute. Of course, there's probably about 30 comments after that. There was actually a lot of people who were anti-Jew in there. That was pretty interesting. Be more and more.
Well,
more
right, but she's anti-Jew for all the wrong reasons because she's a Lebanese, right?
Yeah, the way I look at it.
She may as well be a Jew. It's one crime gang against another, the way I look at it.
Is she Lebanese?
Yes, that's what some people in the forum explained before. She's Lebanese. Look at her. I thought she was a Jew as soon as I saw her. I saw that picture of her, and she looked like an old Jewess to me. I mean, I've seen a movie.
She's probably related to Danny Thomas, who was Lebanese.
Yeah, that seems to be a popular name with them, right? I don't know why. I'm sure Marlo Thomas probably looks a lot like that now, too. You know, her nose probably grew 2 inches, and she's hunched over, and the plastic surgery wears off, and she'll just fall apart.
With that piece of garbage husband of hers.
Now, I don't know who she's married to. I really don't care. Well, then he deserves her, right? Because he's a liberal. He might be white, maybe, but he's a liberal bastard. He may as well be a Jew. Right. Thomas probably is taken from Crusader ancestors.
Or they just
that had a thing for little Arab Canaanite girls, which is a big fault of our race, time and again. All these white nationalists that want to justify these little, slender little Chinese girls they like. It's disgusting. It makes my stomach turn.
Hey, you had mentioned something the other day about how Walmart was going to their distributors and they were teaching them how to run their competitors out of business, I think you were saying?
No, what Walmart does is when they see an item that's created by a mom-and-pop manufacturer, they go to that mom-and-pop manufacturer and they offer it a price for the item. And if the mom-and-pop manufacturer says, we can't afford to make it for that price, Walmart offers them accountants to come into their company to look at their books and to show them where to cut costs. I know I've experienced this. I mean, I worked for a $50 million a year manufacturer as a technology manager. I answered to the CFO, the vice president of finance. And I had that position for almost 4 years before I went to prison. So I saw how Walmart and operated with manufacturing companies from an executive viewpoint. And it's terrible. They destroy those companies. And Lowe's and Home Depot are right behind them. I mean, they're not far behind them at all.
So Walmart comes in and tells somebody how to make something more efficiently. That's a bad thing?
Well, it's a bad thing because Walmart will have you fire employees. They'll have you use cheaper products. They'll have you step on your suppliers. So basically, it's not only more efficiently, but it's costing people jobs. Yeah, you know, not all companies want to operate as efficiently as possible. Yeah, you know, if you operate a small company and you have 50 employees, a lot of people at that level are more concerned with the welfare of their employees than they are with their own profit margins.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
I mean, you would make $100,000 less a year if you were making $2 million a year. Yeah, you would maybe make $200,000 or $300,000 less a year for the benefit of your employees. A lot of small companies are like that. Yeah, you know, but Walmart will come in and squeeze that $200,000 or $300,000 right out of that budget, and that's what they do. They squeeze mom and pop companies. Now another thing, and that they know this, is that Walmart will calculate your company's overhead. And they'll pay you just enough to cover your overhead. And then they'll tell you to go make your profit off all your other customers.
Oh, I know they dictate what they'll pay for stuff.
Yeah, they do it all the time. And they know what once they know your books and they know what your overhead is, that's all they want to cover. They'll cover your overhead on the manufacturing line for the item they buy off you. And they'll tell you, go make your profit from your other customers. Charge them more. They don't care. Now, the temptation is that you can get your overhead covered by dealing with Walmart and hope to make money from other customers. Because if you can cover your overhead, you're guaranteed to stay in business. Yeah, you know what I mean? And that's caustic from a cost accounting point of view. That's all you have to do is cover your overhead. Sell enough products to cover your overhead, and everything else after that is profit for every product you sell. So Walmart, really, they're juggling your company's books in their favor is what they're doing. And they're pressuring your company
to pressure its employees. And a lot of small manufacturers don't want to put that kind of pressure on their employees. They appreciate their employees. They treat their employees like people, not like not like Chinese factory slave bots. Which is what Walmart would like you to treat your employees like. It's evil. They're evil. And if you don't play their game, that they'll go right to China. They'll put you out of business.
I wonder when they got that way, because wasn't Sam Walton a Gentile?
Sam Walton was, from everything I've heard and read, Sam Walton was a good man.
He married a Jewess.
But when Sam Walton's kids took over the company, they didn't care, and they hired professional retailers and Jews to run the company for them.
Oh, so that's how it happened. All right.
And they sold out to China. They sold out to profit. Now, there's something else I wanted to say. Okay. The company I worked for, right? Well, we had manufacturing. Well, we had our plastic injection was done in Formosa, in Taiwan. Okay? And that's because it's too expensive to do plastic injection here. There's all kinds of OSHA regulations. It's why nothing plastic is made here. There's OSHA and there's EPA and there's all kinds of regulations that it's so expensive to have plastic injected here, plastic injection done here, that companies just run to China with it. They just run over there with it. And my company made lawn and garden equipment, and just about everything we had that was plastic came from over there, from the Pacific Rim. We weren't in China yet because it wasn't quite open yet. When I was there in the early 90s, it wasn't, the big place was Malaysia and Taiwan, and it wasn't quite on the mainland yet. Well, Kmart, it wasn't Walmart, but Walmart's done this too. We'll hire a contract manufacturer, right? And it's all our technology, and our company makes these huge, our engineers, they make these designs for these huge graphite molds that this plastic is pumped into, and when you break the mold in half, you take the product out, and you put the mold back together and pump it full of plastic again, right? And these molds are special molds made out of graphite, and they could take a tremendous amount of heat, graphite, and that's how plastic injection is done in these molds. Now, it's our mold. It's maybe $200,000-$300,000 worth of our R&D that went into creating these molds and getting them made by a company that makes machine tools. That's what machine tool companies really do, is make these plastic injection molds. And not only that, but molds for steel products and other products too. That's the machine tool industry was a very important industry, and we've given most of that away to China. And most people don't even understand what the hell a machine tool company does. We would take our molds and fly them to a contract manufacturer in the Pacific Rim. And one of our engineers would go over there and install these molds so that this contract manufacturer can just mix the plastic to our specifications, pump it into the molds, and make our stuff for us and ship it to us. Maybe a million of this part a year and a million of that part a year, whatever. And this is all little, like, hose nozzles and hose reels and things like that, right? Well, Kmart would actually send spies to find out where its suppliers get their stuff made. And Walmart does the same thing. And these spies check out all these little, these little contract manufacturing companies over there. And for Kmart and for Walmart, and find out where their suppliers get their stuff made. And we caught our products made in our molds on Kmart shelves with Kmart labels on it, and Kmart didn't buy it from us. And we got patents on this stuff. Well, Kmart would find out where we were getting our stuff made. They would go to that contract manufacturer. They would bribe him and have him run another shift and make our stuff for them. And they would do it because they ain't got no scruples over there. It goes on all the time. And we caught Kmart doing it a few times. And then Kmart just, we're sorry, don't sue us. Here, we'll make it good. We'll buy you a couple of $100,000 and you talk it. They don't care. They'll just destroy you. And if you don't catch them, before you know it, you're out of business. And you're out of business because the stuff you put all this R&D money into, well, Kmart and Walmart, that they've been going behind your back and getting it for half price. And all your R&D money is down the drain. And Walmart's done too, and Walmart's been sued by big companies for the same thing. Well, they don't care. They're ruthless.
You know, with that pollution business, I mean, you take a business like the injection molding over to the Pacific Rim or China, they're going to pollute more than we would ever dream of polluting.
Right, but they don't have any laws against it. Exactly. And they don't have any laws.
No, they don't, but I mean, if our people were really serious about anti-pollution, they wouldn't even allow the product in the country.
Right, exactly.
So they're content to have stuff made over where there's even more pollution and sent back here, and we use it anyway.
Right. I have to tell somebody on Skype something real quick.
Well, that goes into the Babylonian, the Babylonian race as a center, and then the monetary, commercialism, consumerism, politics and social conditioning, and the other one is... religion and social conditioning. But all the social conditioning factors and all of those three around the center being race, Clifton explains that very well. Consumerism is most definitely part of the beast system, where people bow down to stupid things that this world, you know, offers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in 1995, I set up and Home Depot insisted that we go to an automated EDI, which is electronic data interchange. It's how big companies exchange information. EDI-based invoicing system. And it cost me, my salary was like $65,000 a year at the time, in 95, my base salary. And I was the only I oversaw data processing for my company. I had two programmers on RPG, on IBM AS400s, but I did all my EDI was PC-based. And I exchanged the data with the AS400s. I did it like that. It was a lot more economical to do. And I was doing purchase orders and vendor-managed inventory and a whole bunch of stuff for several different customers. But none of them wanted invoicing. They all wanted paper invoices. They weren't up at that time yet to electronic invoices. So the only customer I had that wanted invoicing was Home Depot. And Home Depot was a big customer. That they were a $5 million a year customer for my company, which was like 10% of our gross sales. Now, usually I would want to put that off on a back burner, right, until I had other customers that wanted it. And then I would develop one program for all of them, which is economical for my company, right? So what happened was Home Depot insisted on it, and my boss told me to do it, and it took me about 3 months to get it done, and I figured that it cost, maybe not 3 months, but I figured it cost my company about $20,000 for me to do this. And when I got it done, and it was set up, and it was tested, and it worked, Home Depot wrote a letter to my company insisting on a 1% discount on all their future purchases from us because they saved us so much money by going to electronic invoicing. It cost me $20,000 to do it. They didn't save us any money at all. The $20,000 wouldn't be recovered. I figured the $20,000 wouldn't be recovered for 2 years. Yeah, you know.
So did you guys cave on that?
Well, yeah, you know, my boss told me to see what I could get out of them, and I got them down to 0.25% for the first year and 1% for the second year. And it was either that or Home Depot's not going to buy your stuff anymore.
Wow. Well, they're all Walmart wannabes, huh?
Yeah, right. Well, Walmart does this stuff, and everybody else follows suit. They find out what Walmart's doing to browbeat these companies, and they figure out ways that they could do it too. And yeah. and that's together with that and with all of the regulation in this country and all of the need for insurance and lawyers, that there's a lot of factors that have driven the manufacturing out of this country. It's not labor cost. Believe me, it's not labor cost one bit. They like to say it's labor cost. It's the damn Jews and the lawyers. It's Washington and it's these big megalomaniac corporations. Yeah, you know, and they've driven the manufacturing out of this country. But it's a lot of things. It's OSHA. It's the EPA. It's the tort system, which is incredible. I mean, some dumb whore yeah. burns herself by putting coffee in her crotch and gets well. What idiot would do that in the first place? yeah. And if I did that to myself, I think, well, I'm a jerk. Yeah, you know. But I wouldn't think about suing McDonald's.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I'd
wouldn't
blame
you be
myself
kind of embarrassed?
Yeah, I'd be embarrassed. But it's that kind of it's a lot of factors, but it's mostly the regulation and the lawyers that have driven the manufacturing out of this country. And another big thing is fuel. Because the steel mills and they're building steel mills in Arabia now. They have been for a few years because it's near the oil. Well, if we drill our oil, that would attract the steel mills back.
Well, did you hear about those steel mills in Pittsburgh when they closed them down, Bill? Well, they told the steel mills that all the equipment's outdated and we're going to have to close these down where it's really inefficient. And I don't know whatever other OSHA laws or lab, all this lawyer crap. But in either case, about 6 months later, after they closed all the steel mills, all those jobs were gone for the steel workers. My grandfather worked there, by the way, in the steel mills in Pittsburgh. Anyways, 6 months later, all of a sudden all that equipment winds up in China operating at full speed. But you don't hear of it.
I have a few people who are really having a problem with the upgrade for this software and reconnecting to the server. Mike Delaney and Patricia are both having a real problem, and I'm trying to help them on with one hand and my focus over here in the other.
I would encourage them to delete the program, then upload it again, and then push that help and update. Maybe that'll work.
Yeah, just wipe out the old one and start fresh.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm doing right now. That's what I'm trying to get them both to do.
We have to do that every day.
I don't want to say nothing, but I mean, they should probably have stopped by once or twice during the week to see who was out here and what was up and say hello. And they would have realized before the program was half over that they needed to upgrade, you know? What can I say?
Yeah, it's just like a couple nights ago, I was dropping a muffin in Walmart up in Bedford, Pennsylvania, and I drove for about, right around 11 hours straight. And I was really tired, you know, when you drive for 11 hours straight. And after they took about 3 hours unloading the trailer, I went and parked in the Walmart big super center, you know, lot. They have like, 1,000 parking lots for trucks. And I backed up there, and I was like, finally, I go to bed. Oh, thank you, Yahweh, for this day. Thanks for keeping me safe. And some fellow comes up the truck. Hey, you can't sleep here. It's a liability. I said, all right. So I just barely creeped out of there and down this little Bedford, Pennsylvania, and squeezed into a little space on the side of the road where I probably shouldn't have parked, but anyways. Yeah, liability.
Well, how come they let RVs parking in there then?
No, this is one of those super centers, Martin. Is that Martin there?
No.
Or, no, this is Matt. Who's this? What?
That was Ken, 709.
Oh, hi, Ken. Yeah, it was one of those super centers, Ken. You know, the big, huge, we rule the world kind of super centers.
Yeah, I've slept in those parking lots. They never say anything. There's buses in there.
No. Oh, you know, a distribution. This is a distribution.
Oh, a warehouse.
Yeah, they're about half a mile long by a quarter mile.
Oh,
they're huge.
Places. Okay, okay. I see.
They're all over the country.
Wow.
And they have these big, huge teams you drive your tractor trailer under, too, with these frozen centers in Missouri and different parts of the country.
Frozen centers?
Well, yeah, for frozen foods like Americold.
Oh, so they keep all that in a great big place, huh?
Well, yeah, huge underground caves. It's really strange driving under there. You just want to ask oneself, why was this dug out originally?
Yeah.
Why not have it above ground?
Well, a lot of
it must have been huge expense.
Yeah. It's very strange, very quiet under there, and I haven't seen any.
How big
a
facility? Like 200,000 square feet, or?
Bigger than that, huge underground. Well, yeah, they're pretty good size. Missouri, you have a few, and up in, I think, New York area, Michigan, Chicago. I don't know exactly all of them, but it's really strange when you drive under there and in those places. A lot of people don't know they exist.
I'm not trying to
make some strange conspiracy out of it or anything like that. I'm just saying they're oddly quiet and different if you were to see something like that.
Well, there is that strange underground bunker that's out at the Denver airport we've gotten pictures of.
Yeah, maybe a lot of kikes. I don't know what's going on there. Who knows?
That's a survival bunker for elite people, right?
Supposedly, yeah. There's Masonic. There's like little placards to the Masons and strange mural that was commissioned on the wall with people dying and some soldier and.
Well, if they don't love our Prince Joshua, they're going to be dug out and
so take care of it.
Won't be. I think that's in Scripture, isn't it, that they will be found? They will go into the rocks and try to hide themselves and fall on us. Don't let us see the face of him.
Hmm. They'll still continue to curse God, but while they're hiding under rocks.
Yeah, you know, that's a subject I wanted to bring up. So Yahshua says that his peace is not of this world. His love and his joy, you know, joy isn't happiness that you can buy in this stupid world. What I'm getting to is that, to be really different, not different in the sense of I want to be somebody or I want to not be somebody, but what we might think to be oddly, how can I say it? Okay, well, you know, Yahweh knows his own and calls his own by name. We don't seek him, he seeks us. There's something, I can't put it into words, but what I'm getting at is that, what we might think is of God of Yahweh, Yahweh, in the sense of, well, his very essence is a shattering of everything we know in the sense of our knowledge and what we think we know. Bill was saying, you know, what we do know is we don't know, but Yahweh knows all things. I think it's important every day to really allow, not allow, There aren't any words. I don't. Just forget it. You folks say something. What I'm saying is that it's...
Well, what he says is, these things I have spoken to you, that this is John 16:33 from the King James, that in me you may have peace. We have peace in him. In the world you have tribulation, but take courage. I have overcome the world. And so the Christian hope is that we follow him.
Exactly. Like the lie, when I say the lie of the beast, you know, that people love the lie more than Yahweh, and we love ourselves more than, you know, the eternal Yahweh. Everything about a lie is something that doesn't, it exists, and it's an ugly reality, yes, but in the sense of being next to Yahweh, it's really nothing. But that's the great deception, I think, there. And how Satan in these Jews gets us to have images or... Oh. Well, what I'm saying is if one comes in contact with the Almighty, the ever-living... There's not going to be you or me there. There's only going to be his presence, and everything will be him. Am I treading where angels did dare to tread here?
I'm sorry, Bruce, I'm not so sure I follow you.
Okay. When we see him, we shall be like him.
Well, yeah, if we don't have the ability to be like him, then we're not going to see him, believe me.
Well, that's all I'm saying, that he's the eternal Yahweh, and he shall not share his glory with another, and we are in his image. That's all. These people say, oh, all these people run around and say, oh, you're trying to be like God, or this and that and the other. Well, yeah, there's a lot of clowns and fools that get caught up into that kind of thing, but the truth is that we are crucified with him into his baptism of his death, and it's no longer us that lives, but he that lives in us. That's all I'm saying is, how many of us are willing to receive the full blow of him, his presence, you know, in our everyday life now? Because if we're looking for something in the future, we're playing games. Then now is the time of Yahweh, Yahshua, his salvation, not in the sweet by and by. So, religion.
Well, it's been a long day.
What a long day? Would you work hard?
Let me say again, if anybody else wants to talk, right-click on your name and click Request Talk Power, and I'll turn on your microphone. Just in case anybody who came or anybody's forgotten.
Yeah, you know, actually, one of the things that you had brought up early on in the conversation, the whole thing about pride and just, you know, how pride precedes the fall, and that, you know, if we look at Satan, that's exactly what happened, was because he became full of pride, and that he thought that he was going to exalt his throne above Yahweh, and that's why he ended up being cast down to earth. And that's
what we could glean from scripture. Yeah, right. I think anybody who tries to change the essence of Yahweh's creation by mixing, by genetic manipulation, or anybody that thinks that they could do a better job than God creating hybrids, they're basically, aren't they exalting their throne above Yahweh? Isn't that what it boils down to?
Well, you know, Bill, in Plessy v. Ferguson in 1896, the Supreme Court ruled that if God wanted all the races mixed, he would have made just one big mixed race instead of putting them on separate continents and dividing them with oceans and deserts. But we're never going to hear the Supreme Court say something like that today, are we?
Well, no, because now the Satan rules the Supreme Court. I mean, there's no doubt.
And what can the evolutionists say to defend against race mixing? The evolutionists have no case, since they say that we all came out of Africa, we were all apes, we're all from the same family, and we're all going in the same direction. So right there, they have no case against race mixing, do they?
Well, that's, I've confronted many white nationalists with that, cognitive dissonance in his thinking, especially the World Church of the Creator people, because they openly believe in evolution. Which is just, Ben Klassen is just another,
he's one of those people Fesmino spoke about. He's
exactly.
The KJV financed to start cults.
He's another KJV financed attack on Christendom is all he was. But he has, a lot of people follow after this clown.
Really?
Ben Klassen, World Church of the Creator? Yeah, and they're basically atheists. They're white supremacist atheists who believe in evolution. And when you ask them, well, World Church of the Creator, so who's the creator? They will say, we are.
So they just worship the creation rather than the creator.
Well, that's what it boils down to. That they deny the creator and worship the creation. That they claim that we created ourselves.
That's the same with Keeney, that Keeney clown up there in Canada.
I read Klassen's book, but I got disenchanted with it as I went on. But I didn't think he was financed by anybody. I just thought he was kind of a nut.
Well, I mean, he shows up out of nowhere, and I think what, the 1920s from the Soviet Union, and then he commits suicide in the 70s or 80s by ODing on pills. And, I mean, that's not really a very white way to go.
Why I think Klassen is a KGB plant is because, or I should say a Soviet plant, is first that there was, ever since the Frankfurt School was developed in the 1920s in the Lenin Institute in Moscow, that's where the Frankfurt School was developed. And the Frankfurt School wasn't the only method of attack by the Soviets on Western culture. But it was the first major volley, right? Since the Bolshevik Revolution, the only people that were allowed to leave Russia peacefully were Jews.
Jews.
Okay, Bill, I was a bit off on the dates here. He was born in 1920. Bernhard, spelled B-E-R-N-H-A-R-D-T, Klassen, in Tarutia, Ukraine. Here it says that his family left, was about 5 years old. They left in 1923, and they went to Mexico. My guess is they were Trotskyites. They went to Mexico with Trotsky.
No. They were Mennonites.
Would that have been too soon?
Yeah, they were Mennonites.
Do you know when
Trotsky... really, they were Mennonites. Yes, they
I know that the books say they were Mennonites. But the Mennonites, Christians weren't allowed to leave Russia. They weren't allowed to leave the Soviet Union.
When did Trotsky flee to Mexico? Was that the 20s or the 30s?
It had to be the 20s. Stalin was already in power by the 30s, I'm sure. I don't know for sure, but...
Okay, it says October 1927, Trotsky and Zinoviev were expelled from the Central Committee, and then they fled into exile. So Klassen was in Mexico with his family before that. My guess is they were KGB agents. Afterwards, for apparently no reason, they went to Canada, which seems odd. They go to Mexico and then Canada. And I'd like to know who financed their voyage across the Atlantic.
It was all about the farming. That's why they went to Canada. They got some land up there.
It says that his parents were just poor peasants. Well, where do poor peasants get the money to move to Mexico and then move to Canada? First,
where do they get the money to go? How do they get out of Russia?
They went to Moscow, then Riga, and then Berlin. And then from Berlin, they went to Paris, and then they went to Mexico.
How did they get across the border? How did they get out of Russia? The Christians were not leaving Russia in the 1920s.
Are you sure? I thought you were kicked out of there.
Especially Ukrainian farmers. They wouldn't have been kicked out of there. They would have been put in slave camps.
Or shot.
Well, just woman that wrote that book, Lebensraum, she was a Mennonite, too, and she was kicked out of there with her family.
I'm going to look this region where he was from and see what the historical demographics were.
Right. I find it very difficult to believe they were kicked out of Bolshevik Russia.
He was from
Crimea. They were.
Bill, he was from the Crimea.
They were the...
The Crimea, where 90% of the Jews in the Ukraine were from. I'm being honest.
Exactly. I mean, that's pretty much like the Odessa of the Ukraine,
isn't it?
That
was the Pale of Settlement. That was the center of the Pale of Settlement. That was the largest...
I'm not buying that he was a Jew.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not buying that he was some poor Christian that just came over here and just happened to start his own religion.
He referred to Jesus as just like a dead Jew on a stick, and he calls Christianity Christ insanity.
Yeah, because well, his parents were religious. He dropped the whole thing. He became like an atheist.
Well, that's what we're told.
Here you go. 11.4% of the people in the Crimea today speak Crimean Tatar as their native language. I'm trying to find historic demographics.
Yeah, but the demographics have changed drastically since the Pale of Settlement was broken and since Bolshevism.
And they say it's less than 1% Jewish today, but I thought that whole region was basically, you know, Jewish heaven back then.
Well, the northern coast of the Black Sea was where most of the Jews were concentrated during the Pale of Settlement.
Like Odessa.
Well, right, it's on the northern coast of the Black Sea.
Well, the whole Ergen came out of there.
The what?
The Ergen. What was that? Well, I forget that kike's name. Started the Ergen out of Odessa.
Well, during the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, a lot of Jews came out of the Soviet Union, made their way to America, and founded their own strange religions and philosophies. And the Frankfurt School was the largest group, but Emmanuel Velikovsky, Zechariah Sitchin, they're all Jews from the Soviet Union that came over here. And Emmanuel Velikovsky was basically an insurance salesman that all of a sudden was an expert at astrophysics and wrote books about astrophysics. He was trained as a doctor, a medical doctor, and he was a Jew from Russia. What does he know about astrophysics? He comes over here, he writes a book, Worlds in Collision, starts a new damn religion practically. Zechariah Sitchin, he has no expertise in what he claims to have, in these ancient Sumerian language he claims to have. He has no expertise in them. He's proven to be a fraud beyond all reasonable doubt by anyone who's studied languages. And he comes over here and he basically starts a new religion based on his claimed expertise in Sumerian clay tablets. Makes up his own interpretation of all these Sumerian clay tablets and got himself 10 million followers.
I'm with you on Sitchin, but Velikovsky, does he offend us that much?
Well, it was all part of the, I believe it was all part of the same Soviet program to destroy Christianity through propaganda and false sciences and false religions.
Isn't that what Bezmianov said, that they sent all these agents over here and they backed all these people starting crazy cults to discredit genuine religion?
Right. Look at Jim Jones. And the media played Jim Jones up as a Christian. And the guy singing the Soviet national anthem, I got it on my website. I mean, he ain't no Christian. He's a straight Marxist.
He even said that, too, that the only free country left in the world was North Korea. He wanted to go to the Soviet Union, but when Khrushchev started denouncing the Stalinist policies, he decided that the Soviet Union was out of the question. He tried Albania, but Ho Chi didn't want him. They were rejected by North Korea, and that's when they committed revolutionary suicide. And for years, I thought that he was some kind of evangelical, thinking he was going to be raptured up. But then I read some quotes from him, and I actually saw footage. He held the Bible up and said, "This little book has been holding back black people for centuries. I'm going to show you it has no power." He's speaking to mostly black congregation. He hurls it across the room, lands on the floor, and then he shouts, "Have I been struck dead? Has a lightning bolt from heaven killed me?" And then he shouted, "There's no one up there that's going to come out of the sky and save you. You'll have to save yourself. If you don't help yourself, you'll get no help and you'll get no pain. There's no heaven up there. We're going to have to make heaven down here." Isn't that straight Marxism?
The bottom line in my thinking is that there's a lot of proven cases of Soviet subterfuge in sending these people over here who invented their own religions or who did things to totally discredit the religion. And it was used, these events, by our media to discredit religion. And why would Ben Klassen be an exception to that? And what kind of Mennonites get out of the Soviet Union and make it to Mexico in the 1920s?
A bunch of them did. And they also went to Kansas. And those are the people that grow our wheat today.
I don't know. I'm still awfully skeptical about that, Ken. I'm going to remain skeptical about that.
Well, all I know is that Ben Klassen was actually a farmer. What's the name of his farm? Where did he farm?
Well, Ben Klassen, he worked on the farm. He grew up on the farm, but he wasn't a farmer. He wound up, he actually did some inventing, and he also did some real estate developing. Like, very close to my house here, he bought a great big chunk of land that seemed more or less worthless, but it was by a river. But he paid like $2.50 an acre, and he subdivided it and gradually sold it all like retail. So he made money that way. He's a smart guy that way. But he's a nut, don't get me wrong.
Is there actual documentation on this, or is this only his cover story?
Well,
I mean, I'm being skeptical.
I've been out to the site. I mean, I've seen the subdivision.
I'm just purposely being skeptical.
Well, they say he invented the electric can opener, that Pontifex Maximus Matt Hill. Why would he take a Catholic, universalist, false, you know, Catholic name like Pontifex Maximus and apply it to himself? I mean, it's so ridiculous.
Why would Adam Weishaupt take the name Spartacus, who rose up to set his free when he was rising up to enslave people? It's Jewish irony and cynicism.
Who did you say was Pontifex Maximus?
That's his title. I mean, high priest of the World Church of the Creator. They call themselves Pontifex Maximus.
Oh,
and Blavatsky. Blavatsky was heavily involved in that satanic Canaanite seed line movement back in the mid-1800s. Where they were looking for a world teacher, and they introduced the Krishnamurti, Jiddu. Have you heard of him, folks?
No.
No.
You haven't heard of Krishnamurti? Well, they proclaimed him as a world teacher, the Theosophists. You know what Theosophists are? They've stolen, they take names out of Scripture. Theosophist is most excellent lover of Yahweh. Well, they take these names and apply it to their Jewish minions and slaves, like Krishnamurti. And he was surrounded by kikes his whole life. Yeah, Jiddu Krishnamurti. He got up and told them they're all full of crap. But then, all his life he is surrounded by Jews. And they got him to bring in the universalist doctrine and all that same old garbage, you know, the vomit of the Jew, of the devil.
Well, I got a hold suspect. Anything came out of the Soviet Union or out of Russia between 1905 and today, I mean.
You know there were a lot of Germans growing wheat there, don't you, Bill, in Russia?
Well, yes, I do know that. I do know that Ukraine was that there were huge pockets of Germans there, and most of them were
farmers of that
involved in agriculture. Yes, I understand all that, but I don't know that a lot.
I don't know that a lot of them
were able to escape the Ukraine in any significant numbers. I don't know that. If that happened, it's just an item of history, an aspect of history that I'm ignorant of.
All right.
Because that's right at around the same time that the famines were about to begin, too.
So you're saying that they basically killed all those people instead of having any of them escape?
Well, I don't know how any of them could have escaped, is what I'm saying.
Well, they claim they have escaped. I don't know.
I mean,
the Mennonite community of Kansas is from that part of Russia.
After 1917?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's a surprise to me. It's something I don't know anything about then. I mean, I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm not doubting it. I'm just ignorant of it. I don't know how it could have happened. I'd like to find out.
Cool. The NKVD, or the predecessor, the Cheka, they didn't really crack down on the borders until a few years when they were in power and consolidating. So Russia's very wide, and a lot of people just fled.
Well, I understand that, but I just haven't read of it, that's all. I mean, I know it's a big place, right? And it's hard to get control. I mean, we have a huge open border with Canada. We can probably walk across it in a million different places or swim without being detected.
Certainly.
But I've just never heard of actual Germans of any religious, except for Jews, getting out of Russia after the Bolshevik Revolution.
Well, they estimate about 2 million white Russians left between 1917 and 1920 as the white movement was being defeated. A lot of them were Cossacks.
Well, right, but it would have been very difficult to flee before 1918 when the German armies withdrew. Yeah, you know, I mean, there was fighting all along the front, right? The Germans didn't withdraw from the Ukraine until 1918.
We covered in Russia number one, most citizens welcomed the German and the Austro-Hungarian forces because they put an end to the Red Terror in the cities they liberated.
Right, absolutely, I remember that. Which probably gave most of those people a false sense of security for a short time anyway.
Yeah, you got to wonder, those people figured, well, this must be the end of the world. Can't get any worse than this.
It was the end of the world for them.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And it should be the end of the world every day for us, too.
I'm not following.
Well, the end of the world as they knew it. The end of society as they knew it.
Yeah.
And it went straight to hell.
Yeah, they sure weren't able to maintain the pure communism.
It's impossible to maintain pure communism from a forced socialistic, Marxist viewpoint. It can't happen. It'll never be done.
Weren't they always announcing decade after decade, this will be the decade where we achieve true communism?
Yeah.
They never achieved it. It was all smoke and mirrors. It was always the decade where the Jew lined his pockets. But when the Soviet Union so-called breakup, Jews ended up with all the property. Shows you who was in charge all along, I think.
Yeah, and they're still in charge.
What, one big, huge, math-engineered deception.
Communism's always going to fail because it's an outward. It's a violation of Yahweh's eternal laws and for his Adamic Adamites in Israel. It's always going to fail. It's always an outward violation, and it's, well, for us, we can see the stupidity in it.
Only a few of us. Now, what did those people learn over there after all that destruction? I mean, most of them are atheists now, right? I mean, they just threw the whole thing out the window because they said, well, if God didn't come back to help us when all this happened to us, where is he?
That's the faith and perseverance of the saints is to, you know, and the reason why Christ said, when the Son of Man comes back, will he find faith on the earth?
Yeah, but you guys, I was saying that God is teaching us lessons and all this, and I'm not seeing anybody learn anything when horrible things happen. It's just like, forget it all. Just forget it. I'm tired of this, you know? No, I'm not saying I personally am tired of this, but I'm just saying that people, I can see them with all those atrocities that are happening and stuff. I can see the logic.
Well, they couldn't endure a tenth of what Job endured, and he didn't curse Yahweh, but they curse him every day, it seems.
They endured what Job endured.
Well, I mean, most of the people today that are complaining.
Oh, you mean our neighbors?
Yeah, our neighbors don't know what hardship is yet.
I'm talking about Europe in World War II and stuff when all this horrible stuff happened. It's like it could not have gotten any worse for those people.
There were 100 million Jobs, right? There definitely were. And some of them never did curse God, I'm sure. I'm sure a great number of them kept their faith.
So my people are destroyed by lack of knowledge.
I like to think so.
I don't believe a well-rounded faith can be compromised or lost when the spirit is there.
No, I guess you're right.
Let them have it. Yeah, you know, if it's going to happen to you, it's going to happen to you. So the only thing you can do is place yourself in the hands of God. That's the only sane thing to do. Is to put your faith in Yahweh.
Yeah, and Yahweh's order. Well, the disorder that's in the world that has been perpetrated by the devil, the Jews, and all the non-Christians, that spirit, the very scene of all that in Yahweh, in His order, the scene of all that disorder is the only order there is. And that's seeing that sickness is what, unfortunately, we don't take the time, the energy, the care to just look at it. Simply look at it, see it.
Well, because you have to be pulled out of it. And I believe that's what happened to me. And I praise God for that all the time. Yeah, you know, my life was blown up. Yeah, you know what I mean? I went from having everything to having nothing and being a prisoner. And it's, well, once you realize that it's that there is a greater power in the universe and that there is a reward at the end, that there has to be, there's nothing else that makes sense, that then you accept what you've lost and you look to replace it with greater things. And I don't mean more material things. I mean things that transcend material things. Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? Greater things being a greater love, a greater knowledge, and a greater understanding of the will of God. But I think that you really took to, I mean, the people that, and a lot of them are here, the people that don't undergo that hardship yet come to the realization, well, those people are really blessed because they've had the faith to come out of the world without having to be dragged out of it by the teeth.
There's every material incentive to remain in Babylon, isn't there?
Well, right, and I was dragged out of it by the teeth. Believe me, I wasn't coming out of it. I didn't have a clue. I mean, I was enjoying where I was, and that's the way it is. And some of us don't need that wake-up call, but some of us do, I think. That's the way I look at it. And the people that don't need the wake-up call, that they're the people that are really blessed. That's what I believe. They're much better people than I am. That's the way I look at it.
Well, when you think about it, the false security in communism and capitalism and all the other isms that the world system Babylon has put together is it's obvious that any search for security in that system has to come from the insecurity in that system. You know what I'm saying?
Bruce, you're way too philosophical tonight. I'm sorry.
Okay, any search for any false security has to come out of insecurity. But if we take, if we stop and be quiet, look at the scriptures and history in our own blood, you know, our ancestry as Adamites, as our forefathers and our Christian forefathers, we
well
eliminate.
Right, but my point is that you don't realize how false well the security of having a good job and a good salary and being fully invested in the things of the world. Most of us don't realize how false the security that is until we lose it all.
They'll take it away in seconds, won't they?
Right.
You know, my dad worked for a company for about 15 years, and they gave him and 40 other white men about 10 minutes notice, said, clean out your desk, security's going to escort you out.
Yeah, right. I mean, that could happen at any time.
What happened?
Well, exactly.
What happened? It was the time to fire a bunch of white men day. And most of them were over 45 or over 50, and the ones that were over, I think, 50 or 55, they all got settlements, but my dad was one of the youngest in the group, so he just got a pink slip. They weren't concerned, though, about the racial angle. They were just concerned about age discrimination allegations, but every single person they got rid of that day was a white male, and they'd been there for multiple decades in most cases.
What company was that? I'm curious.
Pickard? Picker, P-I-C-K-E-R.
What do they make?
They largely were involved in CAT scans and x-rays. They've since been bought out. They're now, I think, Marconi.
Be nice. Sorry, I'm talking to my dog.
I think Picker is a Jewish name.
Probably.
I have known some Jews by the name Picker.
Well, the company acquired a firm in Israel, and apparently the Israelis think they're now running the show. They say, since you've acquired us, we're going to have meetings, conference calls on Israeli local time, blah, blah, blah. And my dad said that the people there complaining to the Israelis are impossible to work with, and they always try and order around the company that acquired them.
Wow.
Well, I'll have to look into the Mennonite thing soon. That's all. That's all I could say.
Hey, were the Huguenots, were they Jews?
No.
Heavens, no.
They were good Christians. They were trying to, that they were a
Protestants.
They were Protestants. I was going to say they were joining the Reformation in France. They were a sect that basically protested the Catholic Church in France, and the French perpetrated a war against them on behalf of the Pope. I hate to use that word, Pope. I just hate that word.
Are you talking about the St. Bartholomew's Day Massacre, 1572?
Yes.
That was instigated at the behest of Catherine de' Medici.
Who was probably a Jewess.
Jew, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure she was.
Did you say de' Medici?
Right? De' Medici. The Jewish bankers that supplied three popes and a bunch of kings to the Catholic Church and the French people.
They were the Grand Dukes of, I think, Tuscany, Florence, maybe. They tried to take over all of northern Italy.
Yeah.
They did supply four popes, actually. And they let me think here. Louis XIV, the Sun King, the one that said, I am the state, les trois c'est moi, however it is. And he also had a white goyim Christian servant wipe his butt when he was done using the bathroom. He had two great-grandparents that were de' Medici's, at least.
I wonder if he was a eunuch. Was he a eunuch? A white Christian servant? That's just sickening. Huh? It seems that that's how arrogant they get when they rise to power. When they usurp power.
Only a Jew would want somebody to wipe his butt when he's done using the bathroom. That's just his way of slapping the goyim in the face, isn't it?
I believe so. I wouldn't doubt if Rahm Emanuel didn't have a few Senate pages doing that right now.
Yeah, and his buddy, too.
And I'm sure they're male.
Axelrod?
No, higher up.
Higher than Axelrod?
Oh, holy mama.
Well,
yes.
Bill, do you know how the St. Bartholomew's Day Massacre unfolded? I think it was they attacked a wedding. They called Admiral Gaspard de Coligny to some kind of meeting to talk about the wedding or some sort of peace treaty. And it just turned into a big ambush. They ambushed everybody at what was supposed to be a peaceful setting, and they just started massacring them and chopping them up. Isn't that a typical Jewish tactic? Call for a peaceful discussion, people come unarmed in good faith, and you massacre them.
It sounds like Jesuits.
Yeah.
It was instigated basically by the Pope and the de' Medici's, and apparently when it happened, the Pope basically said, God be praised.
Comparé wrote about the slaughter of the Huguenots in the Revelation series that Clifton published on his website, but I really think Comparé inflated the numbers. I hate to say it, I really think he did, and I think that's because he's descended from French Huguenots and took it personally or something, but I think he deflated the numbers, which is something that we should definitely watch.
Tsar Ivan the Terrible condemned the carnage in a letter to the emperor. They almost killed Elizabeth I of England's ambassador to France because he was a Protestant. He barely escaped with his life. A mob nearly hacked him to pieces.
Why was Ivan called terrible?
The Jews don't like him. I think he was also known as... Was this Ivan Moneybags? Or I'm thinking of two different Ivans. One was someone who went around and he had all the bankers killed and he took all their money. I think that might have been Ivan the Terrible. He had all the bankers and moneylenders killed in his domain, and then he just took all their money that they'd made through usury. And he basically
so he was a good man, in other words.
He used it for the state.
Right.
So he was a good man.
Ivan the Magnificent.
Yeah. But, I forget the details. I really do. But the Barnes Review did an article on him a few years ago that it was a revisionist article, and it was pretty balanced. And it went a long way to rehabilitating his image. Of course, that information will never reach the mainstream because it doesn't go along with the owners of those companies. So it'll never get on to the public.
Okay.
I mean, we'll never get honest history as long as the Jews own the companies that publish the history books, right?
I was confusing two people. Ivan Moneybags was Ivan I of Moscow. The Terrible was Ivan IV. And one of the two, I want to say it was the Terrible, he had literally 40,000 plus bankers, usurers, and the medieval equivalent of pawn shop owners just killed. He had a lot of people exiled, destroyed the largest slave market on the River Volga, and he basically outlawed slavery after driving the Kazan Khan out of northeastern Russia. He defeated the Mongols, and he drove them back into Central Asia. That's Ivan the Terrible.
He did everything right.
And I think he also kicked the Jews out of all the lands he controlled, so hence he's Ivan the Terrible.
Yeah, well, this battle started in the east a long time before it came to the west.
And then what about Vlad the Impaler?
There's another good man. He took all the Jewish and Turkish merchants, Muslim merchants, coming into, and marauders coming into Romania, and he just impaled them and left them along the road. And basically that's a message to the ones that are following, right? Don't come this way. Don't come into our country.
You know, they would call Trotsky the Liberator, wouldn't they? Whereas one of our people, he's Vlad the Impaler.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Here's an article. I got a bunch of you here. September, October 2000, a new look at Ivan the Terrible. That really, you know, it's been a long time since I've read anything on this, but it basically resurrects his record. Should Russia's famous or infamous czar, Ivan the Terrible, really be known as Ivan the Terrific, as in awesome? A closer look at the man shows he was certainly not a monster like Joseph Stalin or Vladimir Lenin. While some executions did take place under his rulership, it was by no means a reign of terror as the liberal establishment would like you to believe. Yet, you know, anybody that stands up against the Jew and the Jewish plan on destructing, you know, Christendom, it is a monster. That's well, just the way it is.
When the Turks sent envoys to demand that the Romanians surrender, Vlad had their turbans nailed to their heads.
Good man. There are two countries where officially propagated mythology has held sway over Anglo-American historical writing for centuries, and these are Germany and Russia. This is by Raphael Johnson, who's actually a pretty brainy guy, and I really like him. He's very partial to the Eastern Orthodox Christian, you know, Catholic Church. But aside from that, he's a very good writer and he's very intelligent. And when he edited the Barnes Review, it was a much better publication than under Michael Collins Piper. And I've just let my last subscription run out, and I haven't even read the last 2 years' worth because I got disgusted with it under Michael Collins Piper.
I found an a biography about Ivan the Terrible. They're saying that during his reign, right beforehand, the monasteries in Russia had accumulated such wealth that many of them were getting into money lending, and it looks like he put an end to that. Now, I would have to assume if a monastery is getting into money lending, it's basically an infiltrated monastery, isn't it? It's been co-opted.
Well, that's what I would think, because monasteries just aren't, they're not supposed to be ancient pagan money-lending temples. That they're not supposed to be involved in usury at all. I mean, Christians aren't supposed to be involved in usury at all.
Right, and they're supposed to have the vow of poverty.
He issued an edict saying that priests should be chosen and so should deacons in Moscow who were good married people, men that were honorable with the fear of the Lord in their hearts, able to teach reading and writing, who would receive children into their homes and teach them psalm singing and reading from a lectern.
Well, now you know why the Jews hate him.
Boy, that's really terrible.
He also forbade anything that reeked of Islamic traditions, that you're not to wear a hat in church because he said that it's a godless Muslim tradition. He told people not to indulge in drink, feasting, or merriment, and that they should instead be praying for the remission of sins.
Johnson says that the famed Marxist filmmaker and Stalinist apologist Sergei Einstein's movie on Ivan the Terrible, among other things, mocked the famed monarch's piety. So now we see where the public perception of the man comes from, right? From some Marxist filmmaker. Many have claimed that somehow Marxist historians under Stalin and others have actually defended Ivan's monarchy. What might have been the case, and even this is unlikely, is that Stalin sought historical precedents for his hyper-centralization of political authority and found them in Ivan. So they just revised history to justify what they were doing. And that's my comment. Skeptics are still waiting for a better explanation as to why the communists would ever defend monarchy, orthodoxy, or Russian tradition. It would certainly serve the interest of the hack historians of the present American regime to claim that in some way, Imperial Russia inevitably led to Stalin, with the added underhanded claim that the Russian Revolution was in fact very Russian rather than Jewish, and certainly in line with previous Russian tradition. In other words, Ivan was, he was the victim of communist or Marxist revisionist historians.
But, you know, the Russians are not a revolutionary people, are they?
No, Christians basically aren't revolutionary at all.
With our revolution being a notable exception. You know, when we won, we didn't massacre 300,000 loyalists that picked the wrong side. We basically said, okay, you're our neighbors. We're going to go back to things the way they were. You can still live here. And a lot of them just picked up and went to the Bahamas, the British West Indies, or Canada. About a third of them did, I believe. But we didn't kill those that remained. And you know, when there's a Jewish revolution, heads are going to roll.
Well, when I get the chance, I'll scan this this article for you, Ken.
Okay, I'm also reading about Ivan the Terrible. He pointed out to his people that Constantinople was allowed to fall to the alien godless Turks because sodomy. He said that the wealthy of Constantinople were decadent and full of sin and that they cared not for God. He drew parallels between Sodom and Gomorrah and Constantinople.
And he condemned
Ivan the Terrible. He condemned fornication, adultery, sodomy, injustice, pride, and envy.
So he was like one of the best czars they ever had.
And that's why the Jews would say he was terrible.
He also said that men should marry at 15, women at 12. And he said that no one should marry more than twice. So telling a woman to marry instead of becoming a prostitute, the Jews are of course going to call him terrible, aren't they?
Well, I think one of the points that Raphael Johnson tried to make in that article is that Ivan the Terrible should really be translated Ivan the Awesome.
Well, I heard basically his enemy called him terrible because for them on the battlefield he was terrible because he was beating them left and right.
Well, I'll scan the article and share it with you as soon as I can.
Modern historians try and portray him as retarded. In some instances, they said that he was textbook insane.
Maybe I'll post this somewhere on Christadelphia so that people could. I mean, it's a direct copyright violation, but it falls under free use because it's for educational purposes.
Hey, Bill, who are the Allens? I mean, do you know offhand?
Yeah, they were a group of Scythians that Josephus counted amongst the dispersion of Israel. And they were definitely Germanic people. And they, with the Vandals and the Goths, they didn't cross from Asia to Europe for the most part until the 4th century A.D., when they actually went there were always pockets of them that stayed behind, but a great number of them made it all the way to Spain, all the way to Iberia.
All right.
And because I have about 800 relatives named Allen.
Eli has a paper on his site. I haven't read the whole thing, but I posted it, and it's about the surname Allen and how it's related to the tribe of the Allens.
Hey, I got 800 Allens in my back in the before the 10th century back there. And I was, who are these Allens?
How do you get your family genealogy back to the 10th century? I'd like to know that.
Well, I'm not a Mormon, but I went through the Mormon church.
Well, right, but so did my uncle and two of my cousins. And they can't get back to before the Rhineland in like a marriage that happened in 1708 or something like that. And that's the earliest record they could find of my branch of the Finks.
Yeah, I go back to Charlemagne and...
And the marriage was in the church, not in the synagogue. Let me throw that in there. I'm kidding. Yeah, that's the oldest records they could find. And they did employ a lot of the Mormon databases in the genealogy. Yeah, you know, in their own search for our genealogy. And the Mormons keep those records because they believe in baptizing the dead, which is just crazy.
Yeah.
So you have to go to the cemetery and baptize all your ancestors. And you're going to keep looking for more ancestors and baptizing them, too. So they care really. That they have a big concern for genealogical records because of that. I mean, it's probably doing us a favor, right? But for all the wrong reasons.
How do we know they're right?
Well, they, because they do have a sincere concern for that. There's no guarantee that any clerical effort is always going to be right. But what you do is you look for different, you look for multiple like census records that go hand in hand with the death and birth and marriage certificates. Yeah, you know, and it was the churches in our society that for many, many centuries were the primary keepers of those records.
Yeah, they did do that, yeah. But like in Germany, so many of that stuff was blown up.
Right. Exactly. And that's been a big problem.
Well, even the chronology of Joshua our prince was put together by tradition and word of mouth because there was a lot of
that was missing, that Herod destroyed and that was destroyed previously. I can actually, I hate to blow it up on people, but I could actually show a lot of problems in the genealogy of Christ.
Genealogy of what?
Of Christ.
Oh,
and there's a lot of things missing that we don't know. That's the way it is. And it could be established that there are missing records in the genealogy of Christ, there's no doubt. This sixth generation is recorded over 150 years from Jacob to the Exodus. But then there's only five generations, I think, or maybe six, recorded from the Exodus all the way down to Ruth or David or something. It's like a 450-year period, and only six generations are recorded. And it just can't be. There must be missing records. There has to be missing records.
What is that, the third commandment, to honor your father and mother, or is it the fourth? I don't know exactly, but anyways, it's one of the Ten Commandments. Honor your father and mother. That means our forefathers were very strict in understanding where their blood, their seed line came from. They were very strict and religiously strict in that.
Oh, Bill, I found an article, too, about Ivan the Terrible, Ivan the Fourth. He killed hundreds of Jews throughout Russia and the Baltic states, it looks like. He gave some the option of converting, though, but most didn't, so they were all drowned.
He's getting better and better.
And then I found an article here written by a Jew, no doubt. It's talking about Russia. They condemn Ivan the Terrible, and they say, after Lenin died in 1924, Stalin came into power. For the Jewish people, it was another bad time. Stalin's first act was to purge all the Jews out of office, and then he wanted to cleanse Russia entirely of Jews and give them a homeland of their own so they would leave. That's absolutely a bogus lie, isn't it?
Well, absolutely.
He purged all the Jews out of office. And what was Zinoviev doing there still in the late 20s? What was Yagoda? Yezov.
Well, that's the Jewish propaganda wants us to believe that Russia is always heavily anti-Semitic. And it's all a game they play with us because Russia has actually been run by Jews since the Bolshevik Revolution. And I believe it still is.
So Genrikh Yagoda became the head of the NKVD, People's Commissar for Internal Affairs, July 1934. They claimed that Stalin's first act was to kick all the Jews out of office. So he's identified as being born Anan Gershevich Yehuda. So he was born in Rybinsk to a family of Jewish watchmakers, Gersh Filipovich Yehuda and Maria Gavrilovna. And he joined the Bolsheviks in 1907, so he joined them pretty early on. He was 15 or 16 when he joined. Anyway, I'll be right back. I just want to say that he's explicitly listed as a Jew. I'll be right back.
Boy, Hitler had it right on the money. Hitler had it right on the money.
Oh, that's all right. Okay, I'm just calling, like you said, 2 hours, so I'm going to head to bed now. I'm kind of tired. All right, see you.
Take care, Brian.
Good night, Brian.
God bless. God bless.
Night.
All right, I'm back briefly. But I just want to say that
that was a quick rest.
I just had to answer the phone real quick. If Stalin kicked out all the Jews, what's Yagoda doing here? Where does he come from?
Well, it's a lie. It has to be easily exposable. I mean, it's a blatant lie. Stalin was a Jew. He had three Jewish wives.
And all of his children married Jews, didn't they?
Yes.
Is there any? And the ones he got rid of, he just replaced with some other cronies of his.
You know,
his very name.
Lev Kamenev, born Lev Rosenfeld. What was he doing? He wasn't executed till 1936 when Stalin purged him. So, I mean, you look at the Soviet government, and it's just top-heavy with Jews. This idea that Stalin was some great Jew-hating anti-Semite, that's just propaganda they invented after the fact to cover up the fact that he's a Jew who butchered white Christians hand over fist.
His very name means son of a Jew.
Jugashvili.
Yeah. He's a mongrel Turk. Yeah, it's obvious. Look at him. He's a mongrel Turk. Period. That's it. Yeah. I mean, don't you see that in him? You see it obviously, don't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Piece of crap. Sure murdered a lot of people.
Okay, here we go. I found my notes. If we go to Luke chapter 3, verse 31, we see from David, from Salah to David. And then we compare that from Salah's father, Nathan, all the way back to Isaac. From Isaac to Nathan, we have 9 generations in 430 years. And that's very reasonable, and it agrees with the time from the promise of Abraham to the giving of the law that we read the same period in Paul, 430 years. That's where I get it from. And that's Galatians 3:17. And to have 9 generations in that 430-year period is very reasonable. But then from Nathan's son Salah to the time of David, we only have, first it's 450 years, and that's demonstrable from Acts 13:20, and we only have 5 generations recorded in that 450-year period. And that's some observations I made for Clifton a few years ago that I haven't gotten around to. And I don't think Clifton's actually written it out, but that's there's definitely some generations missing in the genealogy, I believe. Because 5 generations in 450 years is 90 years per generation in a period of time where clearly men were not living more than 100 or 120 years.
Is that a problem?
Well, yeah, it shows that some of the genealogy is missing. It's not a problem. Doesn't break my faith, but it just shows they did the best they could to put this genealogy together from a very fragmented record.
Okay.
That's what I do.
Well, if Yahweh can keep all those big balls of fire and planets in perfect order, he can keep the bloodline pure in perfect order down through Adam through.
And that's what we have to, we have to understand that the bad marriages were pointed out, and the men that committed those things were punished. So why would one bad marriage get into the line of Christ? That's ridiculous to think. That's blasphemy of the Holy Spirit, I believe.
The only troublemaker would object to that.
Michael's asking me if I know this author. Michael, I don't know any authors from the last 2,000 years. Maybe just Tacitus and Pliny, maybe. Adolf Hitler. That's the only book I've read that's written in the last 500 years, I think, is Adolf Hitler, or 1,300 years, maybe.
Well, you've read some of Grant Stoddard, haven't you?
Only the little pieces that we studied up for that program we did on him. So that I could respond to my opinion of the migrations of our people taken from the classics to contrast that to what Grant and Stoddard said about those things. But I mean, I haven't sat down and written I haven't sat down and read an entire book by any modern author that I could think of offhand. I read a lot of fragments of books. I read enough of Fingerprints of the Gods just to see what some of those freaks were about. And I read pieces of the 12th Planet here and there just to see what Sitchin was about and how he was lying. But Mein Kampf is the only full book I've read
from a modern author. I don't pay attention to all these Christian writers. I don't care about them. If they don't have two C-line Christian identity, they're liars. Why should I ever read them? I'll never read one of them. I'll never read a Bible commentator that's not two C-line Christian identity.
Thank you.
Or one of these modern freak Judeo-Christian authors. I'll never read any of them. I burn all their books. I'd be the first in line to burn all their books.
Thank you. Who was that Lazarus? Lazarus? Who was that Lazarus, Brian, the one who was in charge of a lot of the programs of murdering a lot of the white Christians?
Lazar Kogonovich.
Okay, now, what didn't Stalin marry his sister?
I think one of Stalin's kids married one of Kogonovich's kids. Lazar Moshevich Kogonovich. But remember, all the Jews were kicked out of the Soviet Union.
Couldn't even say their damn name.
They called him Iron Lazar. He didn't change his name, though, so he was born Lazar Moshevich Kogonovich. I guess he didn't feel the need to change his name by the time the Bolsheviks were in power.
And that Kogonovich is directly related to that word Kagan.
Kaganov. So Elena Kagan, you think her ancestral name was Kogonovich or Kaganov?
Well, no, but the two words are related. They're both related to that same word for chieftain.
Yeah, isn't that the Hebrew word Kohan for a high, like a high priest or something?
Well, Kohan is priest. That's all it means.
Zechariah Sitchin, he was born in Baku. He's an Azerbaijani Jew, isn't he?
Yeah, well, he's some flavor Jew. That's all I care about.
Because he was raised in the British Mandate of Palestine.
Yeah, I don't see how anybody could make any claim to any, not one scripture verse without adhering to one seed line. Not just in a doctrinal sense, but it's a very simple message in scripture, isn't it?
Ricardo's saying, Bill, come on, you do not believe in the purpose-driven life books? They are great for the Judeo-born zombies out there. Ricardo, you know what? I made a stab at those books in The Immigration Problem and Biblical Prophecy when I wrote it by calling it a purpose-driven cancer.
Also, Stalin's daughter, Svetlana, the one that defected to the U.S., she was married to Kogonovich's son, Mikhail Kogonovich. See here, the marriage lasted about an entire year or two. So that didn't go anywhere. That was her third marriage. Her second marriage was to Yuri Zadnov. And her first marriage, let's see, was to Grigory Morozov.
Who's this, that hoarder trying to put on the Supreme Court?
Elena Kagan.
I'm surprised she was married to males.
Oh, no, I'm talking about Stalin's daughter.
Oh, okay.
Then she married Heidi.
Elena Kagan has never been married, to my knowledge, and she's pretty much a thinly closeted dyke, isn't she?
That's what I thought. That's the impression I got. Since I laid eyes on her with that big cigar in her mouth, she's a dyke. No
doubt. Of course, she's a dyke.
And did she have some sort of connection to Russian communism?
Probably, don't they all?
She's a Jew, isn't she?
Yeah. No, I thought you were saying with the. What was it with Stalin's wife? Her name being similar.
Stalin never married Kogonovich. Stalin's daughter, Svetlana, married Mikhail Kogonovich, son of Lazar Kogonovich.
There's it, yeah.
Although I think he was executed a short while later, I'm not sure. A number of people were linked to Stalin through marriage, but that still didn't save them. Their spouses were purged, and then they were purged. And originally, Svetlana was 16. She wanted to marry a 40-year-old Jewish filmmaker, Alexei Kapler. Stalin did not approve, and Kapler was sent to in exile, 10 years in a gulag.
That's Jewish socialism there.
Hey, speaking of that purpose-driven life book, I don't know how many of you remember there was a book that was written back in the early 90s called John, where they had a whole bunch of guys going out in the woods and trying to get in touch with their inner selves.
They actually have a category on Wikipedia, Jewish Victims of Soviet Repression, and they list 54 people. I wonder if they had a Christian Victims of Soviet Repression.
Yeah. They don't have computers big enough to hold the names. They'd have to buy a new server farm just to put the names in.
Here's some of the names they have here. Yakov Agranov, Yosef Amusin, Isaac Babel. Why would someone's last name be Babel?
It proves just exactly who he is. I mean, that's too perfect. Come on.
It fits him like a glove, that's why.
Mule, Lieb, Medallia, Noah, Misael, Solomon, Levatsky, Benedict, Livshitz.
Holy Obama.
Mikhail Kogan, Semyon, Demonstein. Can't make these names up.
I heard some of them even have the last name as Satan.
Well, yeah, there's one. I sent Bill the news article. Some Jews in a nearby largely Orthodox Jewish community, it's 90% Soviet Jews, Jan and Irina Satanovsky.
Why am I not prized?
And that's the perfect name for a Jew, Satanovsky. I mean, you couldn't... Yeah, a two-seed line writer could not write a script back to it. I mean...
And they were arrested for fraud, embezzlement, and all sorts of financial irregularities.
Can't help themselves.
And there's a Jewish actor and a Jewish actress. They just had a daughter. They named her Satana. But, you know, if you were to name your kid Ariana or Adolf, you asked Walmart to bake a cake with their name on it, they'd tell you to go away, wouldn't they?
Well, Ariana might be veiled enough for them not to really notice. But Adolf, they really get upset about for some reason.
Yeah, some Anglo-Saxon on the East Coast wanted to named his son Adolf Hitler, and boy, they really fought against that.
What is the root word burgle? I found one, burgle's son.
I think they took those kids for a while, and I never heard a follow-up on that case. I was still in Elkton when they took those kids.
I think they have the kids back, but don't quote me on that.
Yeah, the kid, the couple that named their son Adolf Hitler, and they had a daughter, too, and I think the state took them for a while.
They didn't use a... It'd be okay if they were Joe Stalin, though, wouldn't it?
Right. Well, I guess I got two unhappy campers because Patricia and Mike Delaney, neither of them ever made it here. And I'll have to try to Skype them in the morning or something and get them to an upgrade.
You want me to message Pro, think?
Well, I mean, I could do that. I mean, if you want, you could message him and ask him, you know, what happened to the upgrade process. But I could do it as quick as you could do it.
All right.
Martin, this link that you sent me to get this document, it's just spinning and spinning and spinning. And
yeah, it took me probably, I don't know, 10 minutes.
Finally. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'll let
it
go.
It's only 266 pages, though.
How many pages?
266.
Yeah, but that's kind of, that
it shouldn't take that long.
Oh, it's a government website. Negroes wrote the computer program. That's why it's taking so long.
Yeah, I think it's adding GPL.
Negroes supervised by Pakistanis, probably. That's why it takes 10 minutes to load a lousy 300 pages.
It was probably outsourced.
Oh, Isaac Babel. They say that he befriended whores, cab drivers, jockeys. He knew what it was like to be penniless, to live on the edge and off the beaten track. He was a Talmud scholar and a poet. That just means he was a writer of filth. And they had a 10% quota for Jewish attendance in preparatory academies and universities in the Pale Settlement, 5% outside, 3% for the capitals, and he couldn't make the quota. So they were flocking to the universities even under the czar.
Is Clifton still here? Can he go a bit?
I don't know. I thought he had a microphone. He must have, I don't know, maybe it's on his other computer or something, but he must have just left. He just disconnected.
Most of his stories involve describing the lives of Jewish gangsters in Odessa. Well, of course, he's going to know about that. He probably was a gangster himself, hence why he befriended all the whores.
Well, if Stalin offed 54 Jews, it was only because they were probably competing with his own interests, or he was afraid they would. He probably offed tens of thousands of Jews, right?
Evil divided against evil.
Well, Michael, I was ready for your friend Daryl tonight. I got my notes out. I got my Greek Bible sitting here open to Acts 9:15, and what happened? I think Daryl got cold feet. He had to work. All right. Okay, Ron.
Ultimately, Babel was tortured, since he hadn't published any significant work in several years and the communists were upset with him, so he confessed that his creative impotence was actually a deliberate sabotage and a refusal to write. They were expecting to turn out more material glorifying the communist regime.
Have you seen that propaganda video that the Soviet communists put out about Stalin coming to an airport? Have you ever watched that?
No.
It's a typical, it's just like Schindler's List, you know, but it's like a nightmare of propaganda, you know. It's really, I mean, it's just, his face is just caked with makeup.
Well, I'm probably not going to watch it, so I wouldn't watch Schindler's List either.
It just looks like the devil, yeah.
Well, I guess Kent disconnected.
But I was really surprised when I went to the Ukraine 4 years, well, 5 years, 4 or 5 years ago. I went there 3 times, and there they had statues of Lenin all over the place still.
They still have some here in the U.S. now.
Yeah, no surprise.
They have a Stalin statue at a veterans cemetery. Did you know that, Bill?
A Stalin statue at a veterans cemetery where? Here?
Yes, in the U.S. They said it's there to commemorate D-Day.
Wow. Yeah, well, I mean, we were whores for the Jews and allied with the communists, so why not? I mean, we're a communist nation now.
The article says the National D-Day Memorial Foundation is moving ahead with plans to place a bust of Soviet dictator Joseph Stalin at the Bedford Memorial over protests from some veterans and volunteers. Foundation President William McIntosh said the bust should be in place by the end of summer. The foundation already placed busts of Allied leaders such as President Franklin Roosevelt and Harry Truman and British Prime Minister Winston Churchill because of their mutual opposition to Hitler's Germany.
Yeah, Stalin, well, I mean, Stalin would probably get elected president if he ran in 2012.
They say here, McIntosh said the bust is not to honor Stalin, who is believed to have had roughly 700,000 citizens executed in the late 30s. Said it is simply meant to show the before and after context of D-Day and to identify what Stalin looks like. Now, if we talked about Hitler in an article and said who is believed to have killed roughly 10,000 Jews, they'd be screaming, but they can say that Stalin killed roughly 700,000. It was close to the 60 to 70 million, wasn't it?
Well, I guess they'll only take credit for 700,000 because they're very modest Jews.
Well, they did say in the late 30s, so maybe in the late 30s he, like, killed that many, but if you rewind and start in the early 30s, then the toll, right, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right. Well, the famines, I think, were in 32 and 33, weren't they?
I believe so, and throughout the 20s.
Well, yeah, all throughout the 20s, but, I mean, the really bad Ukrainian famines well, when they actually killed tens of millions of Ukrainians was in 32 and 33.
The whole of them are...
I'll be back in a minute. I'm going to put a cup of tea on. I need some tea.
Oh, there's a statue of Lenin in Seattle, Washington. There's
for what reason? One.
They said that they wanted it, and it was for sale, apparently.
Okay.
It was cut into 3 pieces and shipped into the U.S. at a cost of $41,000. Somebody, let's see here, Lewis Carpenter, which is an English class, thought that it should be preserved. He offered to buy it for $13,000, and then finally he managed to get it for that much in 1993. And they now say that it's worth $250,000, they claim, and it's in Seattle, Washington.
All right.
Things an abomination is what it is.
They say that there's a glowing red star, and sometimes Christmas lights are added to the statue. During Gay Pride Week, the Lenin statue was dressed in drag. Several people have vandalized the statue.
Well, Patricia didn't stay long. She got here and she ran right out on us.
Who's that, Bill?
Patricia. She got it, and I guess she's ready for tomorrow, you know.
Doesn't it seem counterintuitive, Bill, in this country to have a statue of Lenin prominently displayed in a city with the approval of the mayor?
I mean, we're a communist country. We should have statues of Lenin all over the place. This is a communist nation, America.
We became the Soviet Union.
Exactly.
Here, there's a statue of Lenin in London. There's one in Denmark. There's 2 in Finland, 2 in Italy. Several in the Netherlands. There's one in Atlantic City, New Jersey, in the Tropicana Casino. There's one in New York City, but no shock there. One in Vegas, and then the one in Seattle.
That's definitely a satanic operation.
Here's an article about the ownership of the Tropicana Casino in Atlantic City. Well, they have a statue of Lenin in their casino. That's two strikes against them. I already know who owns them. What do you say, Bill?
Now, would Lenin really approve of a casino?
Depends. Does the party get the money? Are they taking money from the...
Yeah, right. I mean, his idea of a casino would be empty the pockets of the goy and execute them on their way out the door. You know? I mean, or, what the hell?
If you win, clearly you were using marked cards. You cheated. You're robbing the peasants and the workers. Now you must die. Or... if you win at the roulette wheel, clearly you've influenced the outcome with your religious superstitions.
Every time they had visitors over there, they first thing when they got off the plane, they had the vodka and the drinks. Made sure they got them all drunk. Same with the casinos.
Speaking of gambling and roulette wheels, I saw a History Channel quote documentary talking about the SS, and they said that the SS tied some woman that they just plucked off the streets to a roulette wheel after they stripped her down, and then they spun the wheel around, and whoever she stopped at, that guy would rape her, and this continued for hours, they claim. That sounds like something out of some 60s Jew Holocaust porn film, doesn't it, Bill?
Well, right. It sounds like it also fulfills some sick Jew fantasy about spin the bottle. Yeah, you know, instead of spin the bottle, just spin the girl. That's just some sick Jew sex fantasy.
I was reading about some movie that came out of Germany a decade ago called Europa, Europa. It's about a Jew, Solomon, who, they claim it's based on a true story. He was in Poland at the time, captured by the Germans in Grodno or Danzig. And they think he looks Aryan, so they take him to Germany and make him join the Hitler Youth. And he's there for X amount of years. And then he gets on a train on, I think, April 20th or something, and then they say that there's a noble woman, a pretty blonde German girl, who's also on the train, and she makes remarks to him about how he just looks so much like Hitler, and she finds out his birthday's on April 20th, too, and then they start having sex on the train, and she starts screaming Mein Führer at him. And ultimately, he's never found out as actually being Jewish, despite the fact that people from the racial hygiene ministry measure his head, and they tell him that he's an ideal Aryan specimen. Although he ultimately confesses to his German girlfriend's mother that he's a Jew, but she hides his secret. And supposedly this is based on the real-life story of Solomon Perel, a Jew who escaped persecution by pretending to be a German.
Yeah, well, it's another Jew fantasy mixed in with their own sexual fantasies. I mean, that's...
just filth.
Jewish adventure story blended with filth, right?
So
they're sick bastards.
I'll send you a picture of Solomon Perel, and you tell me if he could escape by trying to act like an Aryan.
Well, that was a big, you know, even here in the 20s, they get these high yellers. And first you get the all the real, you know, we think they're Europeans, but most of them are really Arabs. You get them from Sicily and from Turkey and Greece and the coast of Palestine. And you get them into the cities. And they all look white enough, so most of them are accepted as white by the stupid sheep. And then the next thing you do is you get the high yellers in there and the Lena Turner types, and you get them to pass for white. And then before you know it, white people don't know what white is anymore, and we're destroyed. So any Jew could pass for being white if Lena Turner can look white enough.
And the film was directed by someone whose last name was Holland. That's not a real last name, is it?
Well, that's hard to say because I know a lot of Christians that do have that name.
Agnieszka Holland, born in Warsaw, Poland, the daughter of a journalist.
Yeah, well, a Holland born in Warsaw, Poland can probably be held suspect.
All right, it says here that her mother was a Catholic, her father was a Jew, and it says her father's parents were killed in the ghetto.
Well, if they were in a ghetto, then they were Jews, there's no doubt.
And they'd be like, I'm living in Portugal, my last name is Ukraine. Wouldn't that be odd?
Absolutely. I'll be right back.
Yeah, even the, what is that called, Yiddish, that the kikes use? Yiddish. That's a hybrid, that's a hybridization of our ancient Hebrew Christian forefathers and our Scythian forefathers.
Who's is Gerald hosting Christaleos tomorrow night? Is that Gerald's turn?
I don't know. I don't know if Gerald's there. I think that's Jonathan at the keyboard. Oh, here you go. Here's a quote from that director, Holland, about that movie. She said, "His penis saved his soul. Otherwise, he might have become a total Nazi," describing the protagonist, a circumcised Jew who posed as an Aryan, but he never went for a physical, and he never let anyone see him with his pants off. Only a Jew would say something like that about genitalia saving the soul. I mean, of all the mainstream movies about National Socialist Germany, how many of them have even a shred of truth to them?
None.
Other than the war began on this date or the war ended on this date. And really, I'd say the war began on, what was it, March 24, 1933, when Judea declared war on Germany in the British Daily Express.
I think it was declared about 5,400 BC.
I'm going to have to go to bed now. This will have to be up in a few hours. So it's been great, everybody. Yahweh bless.
Okay.
Yahweh bless. Yahweh bless, Brian. So, Bill, who do you have here, Brian? Martin's still here, or no?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Martin. And Unica's been unmuted for hours. He wanted to talk hours ago, and he still hasn't said anything.
Hey, what month was the Kennedy assassination?
It was in August or September, wasn't it? I don't remember.
I think it was September,
right? I was too young to remember.
It was in the fall.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was just... So it was on June 4th, of 63 that Kennedy signed the executive order 111-10 to return the U.S. government power of currency back over to the Treasury to abolish
November.
The Reserve.
Oh no, he was assassinated in November. Yeah, late. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was about
he was in November.
4 or 5 months.
I saw Bobby Kennedy assassinated. Yeah, you know, I was watching TV that day. I don't know if it was live. I think it was. Or if it was the first news reports. But I remember that. That was horrific.
Yeah, and actually, it was Bobby Kennedy who was looking into the background of Martin Luther King. Taking up a lot of dirt on him.
I think that JFK Jr. was also whacked. Because he was actually going to spill the beans on what happened to his father.
So the whole thing, okay, so Lincoln ended up issuing about like 400 or 400, about $450 million in free debt money. And then, and at the same time.
And it's probably the same people that killed him.
Yeah, the Rothschilds, yeah. And Tsar Alexander II, who was actually having problems with the Rothschild banks because they were trying to put a central bank in Russia at the time, actually backed Lincoln and told France and England that if they stepped in against Lincoln that he would see that as an act of aggression and to show they wasn't fooling around, he actually sent his fleet, the Russian fleet, to San Francisco and also to New York.
Yep. Yeah, he blockaded England and France from New York.
So, Meyer Amschel's dream wasn't really realized until 1913, right?
Right.
Okay. And
but they had sworn they would get the Tsar's family.
And someone was saying that up until the time of the Desert Storm, that the only countries without central banks were Syria, Iraq, and Libya, but that all the rest of the world is central bank controlled.
Right. That's the only reason why any war's been fought the last 100 years, so that the Jews can control the nations that are the so-called aggressors, that are always the victims.
Now, in that movie about the Rothschilds, didn't the Rothschilds have some sort of religious connection as well? Because I don't believe that they were secular Jews.
Hold it. If the Talmud is a religion that tells the Jews that they can have all the property of the Christians, how could there be secular Jews? There's no such thing as a secular Jew.
Yeah.
This purely satanic Jew.
It's interesting how all of these Jewish criminal organizations are—they're all tied in with the Orthodox sects. Well, I mean, actually, they're tied in with all of them, but a lot of them are actually are Orthodox, come from an Orthodox background.
That just makes them more evil.
What's that?
That just makes them more evil.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, when the poop, like what Bill said, the poop. When the poop dies, they all gather around him with all the big leaders that are bought and paid for by him. Pay homage.
Well, I mean, all those cardinals wear yarmulkes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tells me they really have the same religion. That's what it tells me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what gets me is that the word pope actually comes from the word papa, father.
That's repulsive.
We're told not to call anyone that their only father is Yahweh.
Calling any priest father is repulsive.
Exactly.
I call them priests. Hey, priest. They look at you like you got three heads. They expect to be called father. Hey, priest. Fall into that language trap. As soon as you call him father, he has authority over you. There ain't no way I'm calling him father. Never happened.
Yeah, when I was a chaplain's assistant in the Navy on my first ship, the USS Ranger and Aircraft Carrier, I had to set up the Catholic Mass up in the forecastle. You know what the forecastle is, where they bait chains? And this really anal retentive Catholic priest, he was like a little short Italian named Zuffoletto. I mean,
yeah, probably a Jew.
Well, yeah, he was, but at the time I didn't know. And I didn't set up his little altar exactly like he wanted, and he had me write down 200 times, I will set up Mass properly.
I was a
27-year-old. Well, I was planning to throw him through the anchor holes in the front of the ship.
Yeah, that would work too.
Yeah, I was going to do that, but I thought, well, better not do it.
Why? You might have been doing yourself a favor.
Yeah.
One less Murano Jew priest in the world, right? Too bad. You missed a good opportunity, Bruce. Lots of people just fall overboard in the Navy all the time.
And then once a bunch of the sailors, and then, you know, they were niggers there and Latinos and, you know, whites, and they were watching a porn flick in the berthing, you know, and this little short Jew Catholic priest walks in there, Zuffoletto, rips out the porn tape out of the TV, goes straight to his stateroom and puts a sign on his door, do not disturb.
Yeah. Like Paul says, the things they do in secret are disgusting to even think about.
You know, he's yelling at all the sailors in the berthing, you know, you what day is disgusting. You know.
Well, Michael, I don't, you know, if I'm not trying to just pour dirt on anybody for the sake of doing it, but Harold has a lot of problems. There's no doubt. He's a preterist. He believes all prophecy was fulfilled by 70 A.D. He's a tyrant over the people that follow him. I got a lot of problems with Harold.
Who's Harold?
V.S. Harold. He refuses to call himself identity. He's a Christian separatist. But if you go to visit him, he'll throw a plate of bacon down on a table in front of you, and if you don't eat it, he'll call you a Jew. And I know people that had that experience personally.
Oh.
There's a lot of problems with Harold.
Mm.
And he really stretches his biblical translation to match his doctrines. He really perverts the use of a lot of words.
People shouldn't follow others like that anyway. So.
Well, no, but if you don't know any better, I mean, you know, he's a white racial separatist, and everybody thinks that automatically everything that he's going to say is good. That's not true.
Yeah, that's a trap, that's for sure. Well, I like the way that Clifton says it. You know, he says, you know, question everything, everything he says, and otherwise, it's secondhand knowledge. You know, secondhand information. If it's not, and it's not outside the kingdom of Yahweh comes, it's within us.
Absolutely.
But it's kind of dreadful and sad. I mean, I'm not going to spend. I mean, it's so very simple, the gospel, the good message of Yahshua our Prince, that, well, our condition, where our brains are so time, you know, worn out with thousands of years of conditioning, that we complicate it and twist it to fit our own desires and our, but it's the simplicity of it, it escapes us, I think, because of our own indifference.
Oh, shoot, they call me Kaiser. Got his little balloon up here, and I feel bad because I never saw it. Hello, John.
Hello, Bill. Hello, all.
Hello.
Hey, Bruce.
Hi.
Bill, I got a question for you. Again.
I knew you were going to say that.
Where do the Japhethites fit in as far as salvation is concerned, since no covenant was ever made with them? How?
Acts chapter 17.
Okay. I'll go read it.
But, well, that's, you know, read it in my translation. That's Paul's message to the Japhethites.
To the Ionians.
The Ionians are Japhethites. The Athenians are Japhethites. There's no doubt. There's no historical doubt.
And the most of the Medes and Persians, oh, respectively.
First promise of salvation is Genesis 2:23. It's to the entire Adamic race.
Right.
Acts chapter 17 is Paul's gospel to the Japhethites. It's towards the end of Acts 17. It's his speech on Mars Hill. It's addressed to the men of Athens. And that's the gospel to the Japhethites. That's the way I view it.
Did he speak in the Areopagus? I think he did.
Yeah, well, that's where that speech is given. The Areopagus, I call it. The Hill of Heirs is what it is. It's a court that was held in the Hill of Heirs, on the Hill of Heirs.
Yeah, that's where they said he sounded like a publisher of foreign deities.
Right.
How about
if you read the Athenian literature from the 5th century, they believed in resurrection. There's no doubt. Read Euripides' Alcestis. It is a story about Heracles sending in the Hades and coming up with the Alcestis being restored back to life. There's several Greek stories like that. That's a story of resurrection from the dead. So early on, the Greeks definitely had that belief. And there's similar stories in Mesopotamian literature also. The descent of Inanna to the netherworld is one of them. That's an old Sumerian inscription. Or it might be an Akkadian inscription. I think it's an Akkadian inscription. What I'm saying is the various branches of our race have always had the belief that one could be resurrected from the dead. If they didn't have, then I would wonder about the veracity of the Hebrew Bible in relation to the other Aryan peoples. But because the other Aryan peoples have these stories, I'm convinced that the Hebrew Bible is true. And there's many other things that convince me aside from that. However, it's another stone in that solid foundation.
Euripides.
Yeah, Euripides, Alcestis, A-L-C-E-S-T-I-S, it's spelled general. That's the story. And her husband, she gives herself up for her husband, and Heracles goes to Hades and brings her back from the dead.
So Paul wasn't really preaching anything to them that they hadn't heard from their own poets. And he even cites their poets. You know, as some of your own poets have said, we are also God's children.
Yes, doesn't it seem that all of those dispersed lost sheep, lost tribes of the house of Israel up in Europe, all had similar, you know, stories that when they did hear the message, a lot of them just received it so readily.
Well, right, and that's why they accepted Christianity.
It seems like Japhethites are just as white as all the others, as long as their bloodline was, yeah.
Well, originally they were. I mean, a lot of the Eastern Slavs have been overrun and are now Tatars, you know, basically. And then mixed with Mongol blood, there's no doubt, and Arab blood.
Yeah, I met one the other day.
Tatar?
She was an attractive Russian woman, but she, you can tell that she had that mixture. She even said that she had high cheekbones because of the mixing that happened in, Siberia.
Yeah. She had those Anna Kournikova eyes, huh? Instead of Betty Davis eyes, she had Anna Kournikova eyes.
I don't know.
Was Betty Davis a Jew Gerald? Betty Davis was probably a Jew too.
Yeah, she admired what's his name, the Jew Zimmerman. What's his name? The musician Bob Dylan.
Oh yeah, Bob Zimmerman.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a real straight kite there too. And a lot of his songs are just, you know, a lot of his songs are just ripoffs of old American folk songs that have been around for years.
Is that true? You mean he didn't actually write?
Well, he wrote a lot of his songs, but a lot of them are just ripoffs of and reproductions of old American folk songs.
Hmm.
Not all
they're
original.
They're saying that Iran is supposed to be sending two boats to Gaza now, and there's talk that they're going to be sending the Navy with them.
Yeah, that's good.
Their
Navy is, three tugs and a dinghy or something? No, I'm kidding.
No, they actually have they probably have a more substantial.
The Israelis got a fleet of nuclear submarines together. The Israelis got a fleet of nuclear submarines, and the Iranians got three tugs, a dinghy, and a small oil tanker.
Yeah, that never happened. You know, Aminuddin Jad, he was calling for the execution of Netanyahu and all this other BS, but there's no way in heck that he would ever go up against him. Just it would be suicide, and he knows it.
Well, this world is all that Satan's children has, and so they, this is all they know they're ever going to have. So they, you know, they don't want nukes going off and stuff like that. But it's strange how ultimately they don't. Satan might rule the world, but the earth is, what was it? The heavens are Yahweh's, and the earth he has given to the sons of Adam. Is that how that scripture goes, Bill?
Sounds good. I mean, I don't remember exactly offhand.
It's like Mike's back.
Hello, Mike.
Hey, ProTank made it.
Mike.
What's up, Mike? You're unmuted. He's not really here.
Can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, hey.
Okay. Yeah, I'm on my desktop right now. I ran upstairs and tried it up here. It's working up here. I don't know what's up with the laptop.
Okay, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, that's on my end then, so obviously it works fine.
Well, there was a forced software upgrade that we had no control over. Because basically a lot of people, I didn't expect, I knew they came out with an upgrade, but I didn't expect that they would prompt all of the clients to upgrade. And a lot of the people with clients out there went ahead with this upgrade, and the server was not upgraded, and if you don't upgrade the server, the clients can't connect with it, and vice versa. So I was forced to, I sent out a couple of mailings the other day when I was basically forced to upgrade. Boxhard did the upgrade for me on the server software. Well, we didn't have much of a choice, so we went ahead with it. Otherwise, anybody that upgraded would have had to, a ton of people would have had to uninstall and reinstall the old software, only to upgrade again later after we upgraded. I don't know. I didn't like the way TeamSpeak did this last upgrade at all.
Yep.
Yes, Fiercato, I believe that Bob Dylan is the Albert Einstein of the music world. In a lot of ways, he was a copycat. Yeah, Iran could get ships to Gaza. They could go around Africa or through the Suez Canal, one or the other.
Did you guys hear about Iran talking about sending over a flotilla of their own with a couple of their Navy special forces?
Yeah, that's what Martin was just saying before you got here. And I said that was basically three tugs and a dinghy and a small oil tanker against a fleet of nuclear submarines.
German-made nuclear submarines at that.
Yeah, right.
Probably our own nuclear submarines.
No, they could be German. Actually, our submarines' design came from the Germans in World War II, the original. The Type 21 boat.
Well, the four people in charge of the military are all Jews. So, there you go.
Who's that? Petraeus? And who are the other ones?
I don't know the kike's name, but I know they were Jews.
Yeah, Petraeus has to be a Jew. I'm fully persuaded.
Well, look at that. The head of national or Homeland Security, Chertoff. I mean, my God, they kind of. But we're going to win.
Yes, we are. Michael, I just covered Isaiah 49 in great detail with UI. Wow, this is like talk show. A whole bunch of people got disconnected at the same time. Never said they were leaving. No, I think there's a problem here.
Hey, Bill, when Jesus, when the the disciples couldn't cast out the demon, was it called Legion, I believe?
Yeah.
Jesus said, I says, this type can only be cast out with much prayer.
Prayer and fasting.
Yeah, that's what he said.
Now, they couldn't do it. I'm just wondering why, because of their lack of faith?
Well, maybe because some demons are, not all demons are created equal, huh?
but it said with prayer and fasting, right?
Yes.
So if by fasting, you sacrifice the flesh and increase the strength of the spirit, right?
Well, that's what would be the logical way to look at it, yeah.
Who would do the fasting, though?
The disciples.
So this is all quite supernatural, then.
Well, right. I'm not sure if that word and fasting is even in the original text. I'd like to see that. Matthew 17. What do I do with my Greek Bible? Oh, there it is. I had it out in front of me the whole night, and Michael's buddy didn't show up. I just want to see if fasting is in the original text. I thought I remembered that maybe that's a little different. I don't know. I just want to double check, right? My memory's not. It's far from perfect. 17:21.
Which text is that?
Well, the NA 27.
Okay.
That's what I based the Christian and New Testament on. Oh, what do you know? Verse 21 in Matthew 17 is not in the older manuscripts. So let's see what the Christian and New Testament has there. Come on. Matthew 10, 13, Matthew 17. Then the students, having approached Joshua by themselves, said, "For what reason had we not been able to cast it out?" And he says to them, "For reason of your little faith, for truly I say to you, if you would have faith as a grain of mustard, you would say to this mountain, move from there to there, and it shall be moved. And there is nothing impossible for you." So the thing about prayer and fasting, it's not in my translation, And it's not in my translation because it's not in the Codex Sinaiticus. It's not in the Codex Vaticanus. It's not in 0281. Let me see what 0281 is, if that's actually a manuscript with any authority. A lot of those vellum manuscripts don't have fancy names, you know, like Codex something or other. I just want to see what 0281 is, if I would cite it in my notes. 0281. Nope, it's from the 7th century. I wouldn't cite it in my notes. But the two most important codexes are the Sinaiticus and the Vaticanus. They're both 4th century codexes. There's no papyri witnesses to this section of this chapter that are old enough. So I excluded this verse. It does appear in the Codex Bizei and the Codex Ephraim Syri, which is part of the Alexandrian tradition, and in some copies of Origen. But because it's not in the two oldest codexes, I reject it. And I'll continue to reject it. But the part about prayer and fasting is not in the Christogenean New Testament.
Okay, so it was just because of the lack of faith and not because of much prayer and fasting. Then.
Well, right. And I don't agree that that would probably be there. I think that's a priest-church type line and not a Yahshua Christ type line, you know? Yeah, you know, because I mean, the power of God is through faith and not through fasting would be like a ritual. You know what I mean? The way I look at it. God can do things for us without our rituals and our own intervention. And even though Mark is right that when we deprive the body and focus on the mind, that makes us more spiritually minded individuals. I mean, that's a sound assessment on his part. But, I mean, if Yahweh wants to cure somebody of a demon or an ailment or whatever, it can be done without prayer and fasting. Yeah, you know what I mean? And I reject that line because it's not in those two oldest manuscripts. The two 4th century great uncials. The only great uncials from the 4th century. And there's no papyri witnesses to that section of scripture. So,
yeah, you got to think about these people who are writing these things down in the past. What is going through their mind when they write down a lie?
Well, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. I can't imagine what's going through their mind, but they did obviously write down some lies that the support for their own priesthood, that their you know, their own arrogance. It's arrogance to add to the word of God. It's blatant arrogance.
I mean, I always remember that part of the end of Revelation where it says, he who adds or takes away from the words of this prophecy, you know, may he suffer the plagues therein. Yeah.
Well, right. And let me, I'm going to be honest, when I translated the New Testament, there were a lot of lines I would have liked to have left out, but I had to include because they were in the oldest manuscripts. So I figure it's either, it could very well be my own understanding that's shortcoming. Yeah, you know what I mean? And if it's in the old, and that's my gauge. That's what I get. Is it in the oldest and best manuscripts? And sometimes it's a total judgment call because a line will be in the Sinaiticus and not in the Vaticanus, or it'll be in the, in some of the papyri that date to that period That's a judgment call, and that's why I wrote 2,550 footnotes for my Luke translation to include all those alternate readings. You know, even the alternate readings that I know are probably invalid if they were in manuscripts from before the 6th century, I included a note as long as they were significant.
Can you give me an example?
No, I was going to say, prayer and fasting are often condemned by Yahshua, our Prince Yahshua.
Well, he said, you know, that the children of the bridegroom won't have no need for fasting while the bridegroom is with them. But the day is coming that the bridegroom will be taken away from them, and then they will fast. Michael, the others just signifies that Jacob was going to have a lot of children, so many children that he didn't even know he was going to have them, I mean, as a race. And that's exactly what happened. Well, when the white tribes crossed Europe, the Scythian tribes crossed Europe, and they met up with their own brethren and counted them for enemies, basically, quite often. I don't fast. I don't fast at all. I've never fasted in my life. I like to eat in my sleep. I'm a pig. I'm being honest. I don't fast. I don't believe that Christians have a need to fast. To me, fasting is another ritual that people get a false air of piety when they fast. I don't fast at all.
I fast twice a week and give 1/10 of all my earnings to the, you know. I don't fast.
I don't think that there's any point in it, and I don't think it's necessary. And I think that outward displays of piety are all in pretense, so I don't partake in any. I've never fasted all my life. I'm being dead honest. Well, I'm happy you found that sufficient, Michael, because I know it was probably too brief. It's late and I'm tired. And I just ate half a candy bar. I'm not fasting. And I get up and I'm starving in the morning. There ain't no way I'm going to fast. I don't believe in any outward displays of piety. Because I think they all lead to pretense. And we all get this impression, well, I'm holier than him because I fasted for 8 hours or 10 hours or 3 days or... I mean, if I ever was going to fast, it wouldn't be for religious reasons. It would be for probably cleansing reasons.
Kind of like your left hand, letting your left hand know what your right hand's doing, huh?
Well, I know. You know, I have friends that are pretty healthy guys, and they fasted, and they've sworn by it. And some of them have done just juice fasts, and some of them have done complete fasts, And they've sworn by it, by the way they feel after they finish it. And when they get back to eating, they only eat certain things for a couple of days and claim that it cleans them out and this and that. I guess if I never try it, then I don't know what I'm missing, but I'm pretty healthy and I try to eat right. But for a long time, when I wanted to get cleaned out, I just ate a whole bag of spinach. That cleans you right out. You get a whole bag of spinach from the grocery store, and you rinse it off, and you eat the whole thing.
I've done that several times.
That will clean you right out, believe me.
Yeah, and your poop is green, too.
And I've done that a few times. But
me too.
I don't believe in fasting, because to me it's just another ritual. And we don't have to do it. Our salvation is secured. If you're a child of Israel and you embrace Christ and do what you can for your brethren and try to keep his moral law, then you don't have to do anything else besides that. That's all you have to do. And don't let any man tell you you got to do more than that, because he's just full of shit.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yes, Michael. Bob Ashton's a good friend of mine, and he does do a major fasting and a juice fasting, and he does not do it for religious reasons. He does it for health reasons, and he swears by it. He says he loses like 15 pounds, and it purges all the fat, and he feels great. And this year I kind of watched him do it, and I was down there in Pennsylvania with him, and he took me to a nice restaurant. I stopped by Bob Ashton's on the way back from my son's house, and he took me to a decent restaurant, and he watched me eat this real meal, and I felt real bad about him watching me eat this meal, right? But go ahead, eat. I said, Bob, I don't have to eat. I mean, we could just have a couple of iced teas or something. And he insisted I ate, so I ate, but I felt terrible eating in front of a guy that hadn't eaten in 3 weeks, you know. That was terrible.
He did a 3-week fast?
He did a 40-day fast. He only had juice. That was it. He's big on juicing, you know, and raw vegetables and stuff like that. Well, which is probably a good thing. And he did like a 40-day fast or a 7-week fast. I don't know. It was some crazy amount of time that he fasted this past winter. And he says he does it every year. He's used to it.
40 days.
He looks like he's in good shape. I mean, he's not undernourished by any. He's not fat at all, but he's not undernourished. He looks like he's in good shape. And he does his 40-day juice fast every year.
I met the guy. We went to his house, spent overnight there.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, he's a real good guy. And I think I'm going to see him on the 23rd and coming home on the 24th because he's going to California for 5 months. So I'm going to take a run down there, I think.
Where in Pennsylvania, Bill? I forgot the. He's in.
Down outside Philly. He's about 15, 20 miles outside of Philly.
Hopefully not in Camden.
No. He's in a pretty decent area on the Pensy side.
Yeah, that's in Jersey anyway.
Yeah, I know Camden. Camden's a hellhole. I brought my kids to the aquarium there. I had to count them every 5 seconds.
Yeah, I've heard it said that people have to run a gauntlet just to get to the aquarium.
I remember the line was ridiculous. I wanted to leave, and my wife kept whining like a little, like a bitch that she wasn't leaving. She wanted the kids to see the aquarium, and we're waiting in this line for what seemed like hours. It was ridiculous.
Was it worth it?
No, I didn't think so. And I don't really think the kids would have done it again if they knew they had to wait in that line again.
Hey, John, I got a question for you.
Sure.
There's a place on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. It's called Stuyvesant Town. Are you familiar with it?
What is it called?
Stuyvesant Town.
Yeah, well, I probably don't know much about it, but go ahead.
Is it, you wouldn't know if that's a Jewish area by any chance, or if it had been.
If I've been through the area, no, I couldn't tell at that point, no.
Or it's in the Lower East Side?
The Jewish areas in New York are mostly in Brooklyn. You can find that in the Williamsburg section. They're all over there. And that's only the outwardly showing Jews, the people who wear the crazy Eastern European stuff.
Yeah, you know, I really always considered Greenwich Village a Jewish section. I mean, I know that's probably not right, but it seems to me that, and I think Fire Island's probably a big Jewish section, too. That was in the 90s. But all the fags, half the fags are Jews. I might be wrong, but that's always the impression I got.
Yeah, because actually that's where David Axelrod is from.
But he's right. All the Jewish neighborhoods are in Brooklyn. The big Jewish neighborhoods are in Brooklyn.
Yeah, they're all over there. You can find them everywhere. Well, in most, especially down in, near Coney Island?
The Diamond District's definitely a Jewish neighborhood, though. You see all the damned little kikes walking around with their big black coats and their leather bags. And I never went to Brooklyn a whole lot. I've been to LaGuardia a few times, Kennedy a couple of times. I've been to, I used to go to Coney Island, right, at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning after the bars closed in Jersey in the summertime, and we'd swim on the beach. We'd either go to Coney Island Beach or we'd go to South Street, South Beach in Staten Island, and half drunk and swim and make fools out of ourselves. That's how I spent my years when I was like 17, 18, 19.
It was probably a much better area then.
Yeah, this is like 1978, 79. Other than that, I've never went to Brooklyn a whole lot.
Yeah, actually, a lot of my family's from Bay Ridge.
That's heavy Italian, isn't it? Heavy Italian neighborhood, Bay Ridge.
Yeah, actually, my two of my uncles were longshoremen, and one of them, who he's like in the 70s now, but he actually, I guess he worked in one of Gotti's shops or something. I guess it was like a union shop or whatever, and whenever Gotti would come around, they would have to like clear out of there or whatever. And so the thing is you know, Gotti, his mother was a Jew.
Was she?
Yeah. Yeah, he's a Jew.
Is that confirmed?
I was in Elton with Carmine Agnello, who just thought his shit didn't stink.
Who is
he? He was married to Victoria Gotti. Carmine Agnello. Thought he was hot shit.
Huh. And you know, in going back into the 50s, what was it, Anastasi? It was Jewish. Or Anastasia, rather.
Well, a great number of those. You know, the Jews loved to give the Italians a bad name, right? But most of those mobsters were Jews.
It's Anastasia.
Hey, sometimes, you know, I feel so stupid. Oy vey.
No, that's the American pronunciation, Anastasia. It's actually, I think it's Anastasia.
You know where it comes from?
It's Russian.
No, it's not.
What is it?
It's Greek.
Oh, right.
Anastasis is a standing off. It's the same word that's translated in 2 Thessalonians 2. It's translated as like a falling away, I think, or how is that? The great, come on, Eli, the great what? The great, damn it. I'm retarded, I swear sometimes. It must be too late. Apostasy, thank you. It's related to that. I'm going to get it. No, Anastasis is a standing up. It's the opposite of apostasy. It's a resurrection or a, I'm looking it up right now. It's to stand again, Anastasis. It's the opposite of apostasis, which is apostasy. So it means resurrection, basically. Anastasis, a raising up, a resurrection. Yep, that's what it is. That's where Anastasia comes from.
Yeah, it could be the stress. I thought the stress was on the last one of the...
Well, you know something we really don't know, you know? So I just pronounce it because the way I think it should be pronounced.
Anastasia sounds more appropriate, but someone told me that it was Anastasia. But I have to confirm that.
Well, I know that from what I've read, the I was sounded like a long E, according to Strong Pronunciation Guide. But, yeah, you know, I could spell it. That's all that matters to me. I'm terrible at pronouncing words because I studied in private. And I recognize that. So I rarely argue about pronunciation. Now you got me looking back at this thing to see where the stupid accent is. Well, you know, even the accents didn't exist until like the 2nd century BC.
Well, they probably had different names back then.
Anastasis, the accents on the second A after Anna, after Anne, A-N-A, that's where the accent is.
So that's the stress.
Anastasis.
Hey, Bill, let me get into this Babylon the Great thing. With Babylon the Great being the white race, I'm assuming that's correct, right?
No, the whore is the white race. Babylon is the system.
Okay, now, she had this name written on her called Babylon, the Mystery Babylon, right?
Right.
So why isn't she the Babylon?
Because she's the whore.
I thought that was her name, though. On her was written a name, a mystery.
It doesn't say it was her name, though.
Huh. So what does that signify, then, the relation?
Well, we're sellouts to the beast. I mean, we're whores. As a race, there's no doubt, in my mind.
So Babylon the Great.
I think the Book of Hosea is a good place to understand that, euphemism.
I saw a woman sitting upon a scarlet beast filled with names of blasphemy, having 7 heads and 10 horns. The beast has the 7 heads and 10 horns, not the woman. And that's related to the empires of Revelation 13. And the woman was clothed in purple and scarlet, and gilt in gold and precious stones and pearls, having a gold cup in her hand full of abominations and the unclean things of her fornication. And upon her forehead, a name is inscribed, not her name. Mystery Babylon the Great, mother of the whores and abominations of the earth. And I believe that the whore represents Israel. Only Israel could be the whore, because only Israel is apostate from the marriage relationship with God. Okay, so only Israel can be the whore. And Babylon the Great, it represents... The world system of beast empires and beast rulership and opposition to God that the children of the devil have seduced us with all down through time. Mystery Babylon is the system. And you know, every aspect of what's wrong with our society today can be traced back to ancient Babylon. Concept of universalism, the concept of one worldism. I mean, that's the story of Genesis 11. The concept of democracy first appears in Babylonia in inscriptions that date before 2500 BC, long before the Greeks had it. The world's economic system is based upon the Babylonian Shitar to this very day. All of our commercial laws find their roots in the Babylonian Shitar. And that's the foundation of the world trade system. That's Mystery Babylon.
Say again?
The Shitar is the Jewish commercial code from the Babylonian Talmud. When Christians began borrowing money at usury and the Jewish creditors wanted protection for their loans, well, the people of Britain and Europe had no commercial code. So the Jews pulled it out of their Talmud and got the kings and the nobles to sign onto it. And basically, all of our commercial law is ultimately founded on the Babylonian Shitar. I did a whole program on that back last September.
And how's it spelled?
I just tried to cover too much ground in 2 hours. S-H-E-T-A-R, Shitar. The Babylonian Shitar is the foundation of Western commercial law.
S-H-E-T-A-R.
S-H-E-T-A-R. You'll find an article, and it's written by a Jew, but it's very well documented, and it's really a decent article. It's written by a Jewess. It was in the Georgetown Law Review. I posted it. It's somewhere on my site, and it's called The Law of the Jews, The Babylonian Shitar, The Law of the Jews Becomes the Law of the Land, or something just like that, that shows how the Babylonian Shitar and all of our commercial law is ultimately founded in the Babylonian Talmud. That's Mystery Babylon to me. That's the usury-based economy, the idea of one worldism and multiculturalism and all these foul doctrines of the Jews come from ancient Babylonia. That's where they first started to affect our race. And that's the beast that the horse sits on right now, and you can't. It's hard to look at this world and look at our race and deny it.
Well, hey Bill, wasn't that Daniel who interpreted, was it Nabopolassar's dream about the stump with a metal band around it?
It was, I believe the metal bands actually held or checked the Babylonian system from that time until 1913, when the Federal Reserve and the Bolshevik Revolution and World War I actually gave the Jews the final pieces of the puzzle they need to control Christendom entirely.
Yeah, and the axes laid to the root, and the head was chopped off and grew back. That sounds like Babylon to me. The beast.
Mm-hmm. What's up, John?
You called that the beast she sits on, yet the name is written on her head. That's what confuses me, you know?
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, we are the whore because we have accepted all of these Jewish principles and Jewish, I mean, I don't know what's so difficult about that. Maybe it's just the way we look at it, but we've accepted the entire Jewish idea of what the world should be. So we deserve to wear the Satan's name on our head. There's no doubt. The whore is us.
So the question is, now that they have the stranglehold is in place, what's the next move?
Babylon falls. It has to fall. It has to crumble.
Well, that's what I mean. Maybe if Babylon is now, the whore is not Babylon, you say. Now, so
no, the whore is the white race.
Right, but it isn't the white race.
Well, Christendom, the children of Israel, who were actually make up most of the white race today.
Well, our race is falling right now. So Babylon, I mean, and people are cheering.
Yeah, it right.
It talks about cheering in Revelation after that, after it has fallen.
Yeah, when the system fails, what do you think? You think this Jewish mercantile system is going to be able to stay together without our race? When we stop buying stuff, this system just crashes. It's done. It's over with. But the Jews really don't want to subject us to a world system. They really want to destroy us. You know, the Jews always create anarchy and try to control that and come out on top, come out as dictators from the ashes of anarchy. And everything in between society and anarchy is just a Jewish game until it gets to the state of anarchy. That's we've seen that in the whole pattern of world revolutions, where the Jew will push for democracy and really he's seeking anarchy, but democracy is just a step along the way. That's the lesson in Moscow with the Kerensky government. That's the lesson in the Spanish Civil War with the Republic. And it's on the same pattern works on a grander scale.
Yeah, it's almost as if after 1913, that's when the real wholesale slaughter really started. Like in Ukraine and
right.
Spain and so.
Right, Ricardo, the Jews are eating each other now. Bernie Madoff with a lot of money.
I mean, other than this,
they're going to continue to eat each other. It's going to get worse.
No, in Revelation,
yeah, the thing is, I think that they'd be trying to eat us more. That you know that there'd be more that the violence would get even greater.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll get Eli to do a Revelation series this year. Maybe when we're done with Paul or something.
Well, that's what I mean, Bill, is that it's the system of things is the Babylon the Great, but the whore, you know, with the name on her, okay, that's us who's been, who's given in over to this system.
Who have embraced the Babylonian system, and as most of our race has.
Right, exactly. Now,
they've forsaken Christianity.
So, this beast is going to throw us off all our fleshy parts.
Well, the beast is going to collapse. That's Babylon's supposed to fall of its own accord.
Right. But the beast is something separate, though. Is it? That's not the beast itself.
Well, the beast is the system. I see the beast as the system. And Babylon as the system.
Mm-hmm. So all the these eras of empires.
Well, they were all part of it. They were all part of it. The first beast of Revelation 13 was the era of, you know, the series of world empires.
Mm-hmm. And the last one being was Napoleon.
And we're told that the dragon gives its power to the beast, right? It's been the money-lending Jews behind the beast all along the way. Every manifestation of it.
And the woman who had the 12 stars with the moon under her feet, when we stop being a whore and stop supporting the beast, it's a euphemism that we are the, you know, true Jacob Israel, identify that, you know, the 12 tribes. And so it's
Revelation 17:17, that's where we are right now. Yahweh is he's put it into your hearts to do his will and have one purpose. That don't mean it's for good. And to give their kingdom to the beast until the words of Yahweh shall be accomplished. That's where we are right now.
Hey, Kaiser?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, actually, it was John Gotti actually married a Jewess, and his son, John Gotti Jr., is actually Jewish.
Oh, well, isn't he in jail now?
Junior? Probably, I'm not sure.
I thought he beat his last case, or they tried him like a fifth time or something, I don't know. Well, it's almost two guys. I mean, I'm going to...
Yahweh bless all. Yahweh bless all.
Thanks for coming, and it's been great. And Yah bless, and I'm going to call it a night. You guys all can right. all stay. I mean, just move to the open house channel, and it's all yours. But I'm going to bed.
Pretty late for me.
Praise Yahweh. Yah bless.
Yahweh.